It's time for TWiT This Week in Tech. Owen J.J. Stone joins Larry Maggot and Devendra Hardawar. We're going to talk about the latest tech news as we get ready for the Grammys. Hashtags, tweeting, self-driving cars, and more. This Week in Tech is next.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Bandwidth for This Week in Tech is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com. This is TWiT, This Week in Tech, episode 496, recorded February 8th, 2015, The Self-Loathing Car. This Week in Tech is brought to you by NatureBox. NatureBox ships great-tasting snacks right to your door. Start snacking smarter with wholesome, delicious treats like roasted Peruvian corn kernels. To get your complimentary NatureBox sampler, visit naturebox.com/twit. That's naturebox.com/twit. And by Oscar, a new approach to healthcare that focuses only on health plans for individuals and their families. To learn more about health insurance plans and get a quote, go to hioscar.com/twit. And by Stamps.com. Use Stamps.com to buy and print real U.S. postage the instant you need it right from your desk. For our special offer, go to Stamps.com now. Click the microphone and enter TWiT. That's Stamps.com. Use the offer code TWiT. And by Squarespace.com. Creating and editing your website is easier than ever with Squarespace 7. It's so easy that Jeff Bridges created his website, DreamingWithJeff.com. Try it now. Visit Squarespace.com and enter the offer code TWIT at checkout to get 10% off. It's time for TWiT This Week in Tech, the show where we cover the week's tech news with great tech journalists like VentureBeat's Devendra Hardawar. Hi, Devendra. Good to have you.
Hey, I'm in Gadget now, but we...
What?
Going good. Yeah.
That happened a while ago, right?
Yes. But it's I'm doing well.
I'm an old guy. I don't know. I'm going to say, Devendra Hardawar is here. He comes to us from Byte Magazine.
I love Byte.
I do too. Who didn't? And Gadget, that's awesome. What's your beat in Gadget?
I'm kind of just like floating around and covering what needs to be done. But I'm doing a lot of stuff around Internet of Things, still doing some mobile and New York startups, things like that.
Far out. Mm-hmm. From New York.
Yeah.
Or are you in Brooklyn?
I'm in Brooklyn.
Yeah.
That's all New York.
Yeah, it's all New York. Mm-hmm. Also with us, Owen J.J. Stone from Places Unknown. Oh, look at that. You look like a rap producer. You should be in like the studio.
I wouldn't let me behind the wheel of any vehicle at the present time. It's safer when I'm being chauffeured around, so just send the car.
Yeah, send Uncle the car Neil. For O-Doctor. Good to see you again, Owen. Welcome back. He's wearing a vintage T-shirt from the old Ask O-Doctor.
O-Doctor.
Yeah, look at that. That's
found
cool.
Her on the internet somewhere.
Also with us, Larry Maggot. It is Tuesday is what? Safe Kids, Safe Internet Day?
Safer
what is it?
Internet Day at Facebook headquarters, yes. And we'll talk about that later, I hope.
I would love to talk about it. What is Safer Internet Day?
Safer Internet Day has been going on for 11 years. It was started by the European Commission, by INSAFE, a nonprofit out of Europe working with the European Union, European Commission. And it's now recognized in 100 countries. And our little nonprofit, ConnectSafely.org, that I co-direct, is the U.S. host of it. So we're having it this year at Facebook. It's going to be streamed live starting at 4:15 Eastern through 1:15 Pacific on Tuesday. Great speakers, Kamala Harris, who's the Attorney General of California, Sheryl Sandberg, who's the Chief Operating Officer at Facebook, is speaking. I'm speaking. The President of the National PTA is going to be there. Panels on bullying and trolling and harassment. Panels on using technology to affect social change. And then we got a great industry panel with Facebook, Twitter, and Google. Kind of duking it out in terms of their safety and privacy. We got 200 kids coming, so it's going to be really exciting. Lots of kids, lots of adults too. Sold out, but you can stream it at saferinternetday.us. So it's going to be a real fun event. It's our second one. Last year, we were in D.C. We had Chuck Schumer speaking, but this year we got Kamala Harris and Sheryl Sandberg. So it should be fun.
Wow, that's pretty cool to get Sheryl Sandberg. Yeah. That's great.
Yeah, no, yeah, it's not easy to get Sheryl Sandberg, even though it's right there at Facebook. But, this is kind of a celebration and a kind of an acknowledgement that the internet can be safer. It's not going to be perfect ever, but we need to deal with trolls. We need to deal with bullies. We need to deal with security problems. We need to deal with all sorts of issues, privacy. And Connect Safely tries to do that and this is a day when we kind of celebrate it.
SaferInternet.org or go to
SaferInternetDay.us or you go to NetSafely.org, either one.
Side note on Safer Internet, like devices you don't even think of. I just had an incident with a child. Someone asked me, they had their 3D and the kid had went on and Googled something and horrible, horrible things came up on their 3D. And they're like, how do I stop this from happening? I'm like, I don't know. You got to bring it to me because I wouldn't even think.
You wouldn't think a Nintendo 3DS would be able to go to horrible, horrible
anything
sites.
That's connected.
And it was horrible, and there was no simple way to fix that.
The next big frontier for our organization is going to be the Internet of Things. I mean, you think about it. I'm wearing a device where my pulse rate is constantly being uploaded into the cloud. Now, I don't really care if anybody knows my pulse rate, but I should have the right to protect that information. And it's going to get more and more invasive, and they're going to get more and more information about us. So we're talking to drone makers, thing makers, automakers, all about how can we make sure that this next generation kind of web, I don't know, 4.0, whatever the heck it is, this next generation of technology gets born in a more secure and safe environment. Lots of interesting things coming down the pike.
I don't know why, but for some reason I feel like a company like Facebook is only going to pay lip service to this for so long before they say,
The internet will be safest when it's all on Facebook, right? Let them just take over everything.
Well, that's true. And that's one of the negatives to saying a safer internet is, well, the safest way to do it is to have gated, gated communities.
The safest way to do it is not be online at all. I mean, that's really safe, right?
Yeah.
But, you know, the fact is that there's a business case to be made for safety. And I think that's part of what we try to talk to these companies about. You don't want a company or a service that is, you know, run by trolls or is occupied by trolls. So. Right. I think there's a little bit of a vested interest. I mean, there's a tension. There's always a tension, especially in the privacy side. But when it comes to security and keeping people from being harassed, I think it's in the interest of companies to do what they can. And a lot of them do good work. A lot of them, well, hey, what Dick Costolo this week admitted that.
He said it's my fault that there's trolling on Twitter.
Sucks. Right. I mean, that's a pretty interesting comment that he admitted in an internal memo that got leaked to The Verge. But that's a good example where companies know they've got to do a better job.
I think if I make the analogy to a safer cities, you're never going to have a city be safe. No. There's always going to be back alleys. There's always going to be dangerous things you could do in a city. But the idea would be let's, as a community, kind of get together and try to encourage places on the internet where people can participate without fear of trolling, bullying.
So when you say that, it's the system of, in Philadelphia, it was called Killadelphia. They had more murders per capita than anybody else. So what the mayor did was he put a cop on every corner for 6 months in all the crime-related places. So crime fell. So the force being out there did it. When AOL was known for chat rooms and little girls getting kidnapped and put on TV, that, oh, these guys are coming on to AOL chat got smushed down. So as soon as Facebook is known for the place that pedophiles go to pick up on children, then maybe they'll do something crazy about it. Or the same thing with this bullying and the Gamergate and all that kind of stuff. Once it becomes mass media that people are like, oh, man, people are getting bullied on Twitter. Well, Twitter better do something. Something happens to some girl on
we
Facebook.
We need Hamsterdam.
They go do something, yeah.
We were talking about The Wire. We need Hamsterdam.
The reason we call it Safer Internet Day, it's safer. It's never going to be safer.
Safer. Right,
Leo. Yeah. And the fact is, you know, MySpace and Facebook already went through that predator panic a few years ago. It turns out there really aren't that many predators. They're there, but they're... aren't that many kids that actually get snatched up by
I'm glad to hear you say that going. Because sometimes I think when, you know, you've really been big on safer kids and all of this stuff. Yeah. And sometimes I worry that there's this kind of panic being created that the internet is full of predators.
No, there it isn't.
We know that most kids who are abused are abused by people they know, by relatives, by
friends.
You know
the most dangerous place for a kid?
At home.
Home is by far the most dangerous place for kids. So if you want to keep your kid safe, don't let him go to the doctor. Don't let him go to school. Don't let him go to any place of worship. And don't let him go home. But the bottom line is that, you know, that kids, you know, there's been moral panics about predators. And we had moral panics about bullying. And then we had moral panics about sexting, moral panics about all these things. And there are dangers on the internet, no question about it. Even security. I don't lose a lot of sleep about internet security. I know there are risks. But, hey, if I walk outside, somebody could steal my wallet, break my window, knock me down in the street. There's no such thing as a completely safe environment, even in Philadelphia.
And I think worry sometimes. We talk about this a lot on This Week in Google because, as you know, Jeff Jarvis is an advocate for being public. And I'm kind of public myself. And I worry that we lose something by trying to enforce privacy on the internet. I think the internet inherently is a public space. And so to make the people who really want privacy
don't get online.
And I don't want to say that either, because online is so valuable. But you have to understand, you're really participating in a public space.
I mean, I don't want the public to be looking over my shoulder while I'm doing online banking. But you're right. If I'm on Facebook, I just post everything to public. I mean, first of all, I have no private life. But second of all, I don't really believe that you could guarantee privacy on a social networking site, even though they've got great privacy tools, or even if they do.
You just can't trust them. We know Snapchat, people thought that their Snapchat images were safe, and they were being stored and visible. We thought that Facebook would honor its privacy controls. Even Mark Zuckerberg was confused and had posted publicly pictures that were private.
I mean, and that's what I mean by not getting online. I know a lot of people that just don't use Facebook.
But that's the wrong answer, too, isn't it?
No, you can still use the internet. You can still Google and research and use the internet for what you want, but you don't have to put a picture of yourself eating a birthday cake and ice cream down your nose for everybody to see. You can be selective about what you want to do. If you don't want to be public, don't tweet out that you had a ham sandwich at Starbucks on the corner. So people can select and choose what they want to do if they want to be private.
Devendra, you're what we would call a net native. You basically grew up with the internet, right?
Although I feel like I'm in a weird spot because for most of my life, I didn't have the internet. You know, I got it when I was around, well, I guess maybe half my life. Half my life, I've had no internet. And then my parents got like a 486 and I got Prodigy in the mid-90s. Yeah. So I have the distinct memory of the world without the internet, and I saw how quickly everything changed. And it's a weird thing to notice, just like how different things are now.
Yeah, my kids, for instance, 20 and 23, have always had internet. They've always, they were born in 92 and 94. Internet has always been part of their lives. And I don't think they think a lot about privacy and security. I just don't think it's on the radar.
Right. Maybe they think about it differently. I think the thing we're really talking about is that consumers should have control over, what they're doing. So, if you're putting something online and you know specifically you're making it public, that's it. That's the agreement. But if you set it to private or something like that, it would be nice if, companies honored what they said they were going to do. I think it's the obfuscation of what's actually happening with our data. That's kind of the bigger problem.
Yeah. And the thing about your kids, Leo, I mean, I can't speak for your kids, but there's been a little research about kids and privacy. It turns out kids actually do care about privacy, but in different ways than adults do. Right. They want privacy from their parents, from their teachers. Mm-hmm. They still want some level of privacy and control. They just don't have the same concept of privacy that a lot of adults would. But they think about it in their own way.
That's what Dana Boyd, who's done great research on kids and privacy, has concluded, is that the word even means something different to people who are internet natives. Sure.
Yeah, it was Dana's research that I was citing. And there's a lot of really great data out there. I'm actually pretty optimistic about the millennials, and I don't know what we're calling our current teenagers. But I'm pretty optimistic. They're sure a heck of a lot better than we were when we were young.
And the only way to really be private, in my opinion, the only way to really be private and to use the internet privately is to use encryption, end-to-end encryption. I'm encrypted. What I send is encrypted all the way to the endpoint, whether it's a bank, Amazon, or an individual. Then it's really private. Even the NSA can't see it. But I don't think my kids even are aware of the notion of encryption.
It needs to be built into every service they use. They shouldn't have to think about it any more than you think about airbags.
It should just be the service itself. Like, we've seen a lot of messaging clients, like Fire Chat, just really blow up because they're so secure.
So people do. They know. Oh, this is secure. WhatsApp just added secure. Mm-hmm. In fact, they're using the red phone stuff, right? Silent circle stuff. And do you think that people who use WhatsApp are aware of that and choose WhatsApp because of that?
No.
Not necessarily WhatsApp, but for an app like Fire Chat or
which
something.
Is explicitly secure, yeah.
Yeah, I think that's it. It's like the service itself. You don't have to worry about your PGP key. You don't have to share it to somebody.
But FireChat, I never did that because it was such a mess. It hasn't reached critical mass yet. I mean, you've got to build that. I mean, you've got to be talking Gmail, Yahoo Mail, Facebook, Twitter.
Well, and chiefly FireChat was used not for encryption, but because it's a mesh system. It was used in things like the Hong Kong protests because you weren't on a public internet. You were on a private mesh network.
Right.
And you didn't even have to have internet access on your phone to use it, which I thought was fascinating. But I don't know if it was the encryption that was really the thing that made people say.
Right. I think I'm thinking of another service right now.
There's TextSecure. There's quite a few.
Zimmerman has a company, a new company out, doesn't he?
Yeah, he and Ladar Levison are doing Dark Mail.
Right. But the name, even the name Dark Mail, I mean, that's kind of ominous.
Dark Mail. You know, when I'm using Bitcoin to buy my drugs, I always make sure that my secure network is up and running.
So all right, let's talk about it. Let's talk about the Silk Road, ladies and gentlemen. Ross Ulbricht, guilty on all seven counts. I was accused on Twitter, the bastion of truth, of misstating what happened in the Silk Road trial. Last week we had Nick Bilton on the show, and Nick is writing the book, the Silk Road book, which has already been optioned for a movie. It's a fascinating story. Ulbricht guilty on all seven counts of creating Silk Road, which was used, which was basically a black market for illicit products, chiefly drugs. Used Tor, didn't it? It was a Tor site. And he was arrested and accused of being Dread Pirate Roberts. Life sentence? That's the question that this article poses on the news BTC.
Man, that'd be crazy.
I don't think a life sentence.
I don't think a life sentence either. I mean, there's been a lot of drug dealers getting caught with a lot of drugs. I don't think they got life. Life is it seems excessive. I mean, but at the same time, it's amazing that $200 million, that's probably what they could find. That's probably what they actually could get a hold of, because – once it gets to that number, you don't know what you're talking about, you know. But it reminds me like the things on people on Instagram saying, "Oh, don't post your weed on Instagram because there's a drug raid. They put $350 million in one weekend just surfing Instagram for people to post drugs." I'm like, regular people have that much weed and drugs in their house, and then they're dumb enough to post pictures of it.
Okay. Right? Exactly. That's what.
So
that's amazing.
I mean, $200 million. I'm sure that's a drop in the bucket. I mean, if they just went on Instagram, got 350 in 2 days. So, very, very interesting and sneaky way to get your drugs delivered and keep it off the books.
We'll find out May 15th. That's when the sentencing happens. The jury only took a few hours, which tells me that they were pretty convinced by the evidence against him. It seemed like a kind of a tangled thread. The FBI found his postings on a forum and then tracked it back to his computer. I mean, it was a very complicated thread and a technically very difficult thing for even a technologist to follow. I don't know. I doubt somehow that the jury had any idea. We talked last week about the fact that neither side wanted a technically literate jury, that they were hoping that the ignorance of the jury in technology would help them, each side. Mm-hmm. Turns out, I guess it helped the prosecution more than the defense.
I wonder how long that'll last, like sort of like just hiding certain facts from juries like that.
There was even a debate. They're reading transcripts of posts, and there's a emoticon, a happy face emoticon, and they were debating whether that should be read in court. They went back and forth. Finally, the judge said, well, that's part of the message. You have to say it, but you can't say it. You have to say it in a flat voice.
Smiley face.
Smiley face.
Winks.
All of the transcripts had to be delivered in a – they had to be read because they had to get into the record. But they had to be read in a flat, neutral, so as not to slant. Crazy.
So smiley face is now a word that's used in a transcript.
Well, I think it's still – in that trial, it was in the transcript. Yeah. It's still a question – of whether that going forward, and we mentioned this last week, I served on a trial of one of the predators in the NBC Dateline.
I didn't know that.
Yeah. To catch a predator. Yeah. And heard a lot of chat transcripts read in a monotonic voice by a defense and prosecution. And it was really, and now I'm technically literate, so I knew what was going on, but it was really interesting. And I really do have the feeling that it is an opportunity for the two different sides to slant it in their favor if the jury doesn't really understand what they're hearing.
Yeah, and if it doesn't work in your favor, then you could just appeal on basically
right,
that.
Right.
You know, people not understanding and you're misleading
right.
the information. That's an easy appeal to get in the system. So,
fascinating.
How did that trial, how did the trial turn out, Leo?
The prosecution presented, the judge threw it out saying it's entrapment. We never even heard the defense.
Interesting. Interesting. Very interesting.
And I think it was entrapment.
Yeah.
It was
a lot of times it is, yeah.
Yeah, I was, you know, this, you probably all saw this TV show, the Dateline show, where
Catch
they got the
predator.
Guy and The guy thinks he's talking to an underage girl. In fact, it's an adult. They use a kind of an advocacy group to do these chats. There's a
perverted
lot of
justice. It was called Perverted Justice.
Perverted Justice.
And the person who ran it is now one of the security officers at Twitter. Del Harvey. Was
You're kidding.
Yeah, no. And she's very proud. Look, I mean, wow. You know, they were well-motivated, kind of a sucky name, but well-motivated.
Well, but yeah. what Perverted Justice did is it really was entrapment. They would get adults, and they would really try to get people in these chat rooms to talk dirty to them.
Yeah.
And they would use techniques that no child would use. It wasn't overtly like talk dirty to me, but they would use techniques that they knew as adults would appeal to some guys. And and I don't think a kid would talk like that. And so there was really a lot of question marks around their methodology. But the fact that the Petaluma Police Department enlisted them to create this sting and then allowed NBC to pay them to film the sting, I think kind of the judge was a little disgusted.
You know, there was one case of a prosecutor that was caught up in a sting and he wound up killing himself when the cops came to when the TV crew came to his house. It was a suicide. And the cops were really upset about it because it was not the way they would have done an apprehension.
Right.
But the TV camera showed up before the cops did.
Well, exactly.
You know, it's crazy.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. One person said, if you want justice, call a cop, not a TV producer.
Yeah.
The trial, actually, I'm interested in seeing how something like The Good Wife will deconstruct this, because that's a show that's actually done a great job of taking these obscure tech concepts like Bitcoin and the way Reddit came together to hunt down the supposed, Boston Marathon bomber.
Right.
That show has done a great job of like taking the legal questions and going the extra step and kind of looking at that in a really interesting way.
I said last week, everything I know about law, I've learned from The Good Wife.
Exactly. Yeah.
I guess that's one step up from Law and Order.
I don't really know. Let's take a break. When we come back, Tom Wheeler, the chairman of the FCC, has said we are going to ensure net neutrality by invoking Title II. We'll talk about that and a lot more. Devendra Hardwar is here from Engadget. Odokta, J.J. Owen, J.J. Stone from Odokta. Look at those shades. Man.
Maui Jims.
What was the phrase I heard last night? The blank grill. What was it? Something like that? You give me the blank grill. Man, it scares the hell out of me. I don't know what you're thinking behind them.
Gangsta grill, Uncle
Gangsta Leo's. Grill. That's Gangsta what it is. The OG Owen JJ Stone.
Stop it.
No, he broke up. That ruins the... Thank you. And Larry Magid is also here from CBS Radio and Connect Safely.
.org.
No shades.
I'll have to go.
See, Larry, you look like Kurt Vonnegut. There's no way I could think of you as intimidating.
Oh,
you look
God. Cheerful
and happy.
Oh, get my bad side. Talk to my wife. I can be very grumpy.
Oh, if you're grumpy, you need a snack. It's Nature Box time. Oh, my favorite part of the show. We break out the snacks. Nature Box, awesome snacks delivered right to your door. You can get a monthly box of goodness from Nature Box, and you'll feel good about it, too, for you, for your kids. We get them for our employees because these are nutritionist-approved. Never artificial color, artificial flavor, no high-fructose corn syrup, no trans fats, just good stuff, minimal processing, and delicious. This is the sweet blueberry almonds.
Those are awesome.
Have you had them?
You sent me a box.
Oh, I did, didn't I?
Yes, you did.
You were on last time we talked about almonds, sugar, natural flavor. And that's it. And, delicious. By the way, you can choose from sweet, from savory, from spicy. They have snacks for dietary needs like gluten-free or vegan snacks. These are pistachio power clusters. This is the one. I don't know how this is still in here. This is the staff's favorite, coffee kettle corn. Yeah. Isn't that good? Kettle corn with coffee caramelized popcorn. Italian bistro pretzels. So here's the deal. I'm going to get you a sampler. Roasted Peruvian corn. What are you eating there, Jason? What do you like there?
Peanut butter nom-noms. Sorry, I was so
distracted. Those are good. I'm going to have the Asiago and cheddar cheese crisps. Let's pass these around to our studio audience.
That sounds good.
Because they're looking mighty hungry. All right. Chris, come here.
Hungry.
And we'll pass around. Let's pass around those. They could try the coffee kettle corn, too. Pass those around. You know what's nice? These are resealable bags. So if the studio audience doesn't, in fact, eat everything, we can seal it up, put it back in the box. Nature Box. Get your sampler today. $2 for shipping, and you'll get the most popular snacks so you can see what Nature Box has to offer. Then the next time you're a little peckish in the afternoon, you don't go to the candy bar machine, the snack machine. You go to your Nature Box. Start your trial today. The complimentary sampler awaits at naturebox.com/twit. Stay full. Stay strong. Start snacking smarter.
I don't have any Nature Box handy, but I actually just, while you were doing that spot, I went out to my cupboard, got some nuts because he made me hungry.
You see?
Thanks a lot.
Yeah, you're welcome.
Now I got another 20 minutes in treadmill. Thanks to you.
I ate all mine.
Did you eat all yours? Did we send you a big box, Owen?
You sent me a medium box. I did share, though. I wasn't. I went over to my friend
you
who does yoga.
Never sent
I
me
shared.
Anything.
I'll send you. All right.
Put
Larry down for a Nature Box. Devendra, too. We got to get you guys a
right.
Nature Box.
See, Larry, you got to come on like I do. You got to demand what you deserve as an individual, and Uncle Leo will take care of you. See, I put my glasses on so I can be like you, Uncle Larry.
I like that.
I don't want
That's
you to
good.
Be alone.
From now
That's
on,
good.
My lawyer negotiates every appearance. That's it.
So what do you guys think? You like? Is it good? Yeah. Yeah. The audience seems to like it.
I don't know. I'm eating peanuts.
No, I'm asking you. I'm asking our fine studio. We got a good studio audience here. Lots of people from all over visiting today as we do the show. It's always nice to have. It was a very rainy day in Petaluma, so I'm glad they braved the weather. Tom Wheeler, who we thought was a henchman for the cable industry and the wireless industry. John Oliver called him a dingo. He said, you wouldn't put your broadband in the care of a dingo. It's like putting your children in the care of a dingo. He was called all sorts of names. I myself said he was a shill. He is in the Hall of Fame for the National Cable Television Association and the wireless industry as a lobbyist. Yet, in fact, I wondered why President Obama even appointed him to be the chairman of the FCC, given his background. Yet he seems to have done the right thing. He listened. They got more comments in the comment period than any FCC issue since the wardrobe malfunction on the Super Bowl 10 years ago.
Right.
And he has said, now we've decided everybody but the ISPs seem to be behind using Title II regulation as specified by the Telecommunications Act of 1934. Title II basically says, broadband providers are common carriers, and they are regulated. They may be regulated by the FCC. This has been the whole issue,
yeah,
is that the FCC can only do what it's mandated to do. Right. Congress says, you're in charge of this, this, and this, and that's all you can do.
Right.
Initially, the FCC last year issued what they called open internet regulations or rules. Verizon sued, took them to court. The judge said, you know, you're right, Verizon. This is not within the FCC's purview. But he did. Actually, it was a judicial panel. They did say, but if you were to declare broadband providers common carriers, it would be within your realm to tell them what to do. And the FCC has been really trying to avoid doing this. I think a lot of us were concerned that this might be a heavy-handed form of regulation. But Wheeler has said, no, we're going to use a doctrine called forbearance,
yep,
to enforce selectively within Title II. For instance, we will never regulate rates. That was
right.
One thing ISPs were worried about.
You know, it's interesting. If you read his commentary, you know, he did a piece in Wired last week, and he actually pointed out that he himself ran a company that wound up getting shut down or basically being AOL with its competitor. And AOL was on the open phone network at the time, because even then you could hook a modem to any phone line. His company was on the cable system, which was locked up. So he actually made the case that having a regulation which required certain kinds of neutrality will enhance innovation, even though the cable and phone industry is making the opposite argument. They're claiming that regulation is anti-innovation. So it was an interesting point he made. Again, he based it on his own company that was dealing with the cable industry that essentially wouldn't give him an equal playing field, whereas Steve Case had an equal playing field through AOL and the phone network.
Well, I have to apologize to Tom Wheeler. And I'm sure John Oliver, when he comes back on the air, will say, I'm sorry I called you a dingo. I'm sorry I called you a shill, Tom. You did the right thing. I have to say, when I read that he said we're going to use Title II, I did go,
oop.
Because while this was something many of us thought needed to happen, there is a real concern about government control, yeah, of the internet. We don't want that either.
Is this in the books or is this conversation?
That's a great question. He says, I'm going
because
to...
Because saying something to me doesn't mean anything until
no,
I see
I agree.
It written down,
yeah,
and then somebody smarter than me comes back and tells me that it's something I should believe in. because I'm not going to read it, but I need it written down so somebody else can read it and tell me about it.
So what he's done technically is recommend it. The members of the FCC, the commissioners, have to vote. He has he says, I am circulating to the members of the FCC proposed new rules to preserve the Internet as an open platform for innovation and free expression.
Does Congress have anything to say about this one way or the other?
Well, okay, so what will happen first is the FCC commissioners will vote yay or nay. I presume they're going to say yay because President Obama has said this is what he wanted and the chairman said this is what he wanted. And I know several commissioners have said we'll support this. So I'm going to presume it passes. At that point, those are official rules unless Congress overrules it.
Right.
So Congress and by the way, if you think the telecom and the wireless people had a champion in Tom Wheeler, they have spent a lot of money on a lot of campaigns, and they have many, many champions in Congress.
Right.
So before you go saying, oh, he's not a dingo anymore, just think of the common phrase of people who are skeptical about life. The person you think is the devil comes out and says, I'm your friend, I'm going to do right by you. And you say, oh, thankfully, finally, you're going to do it. Knowing right well in his back pocket that people are going to strike down the notion that he wanted. I just like to wait and see that what he said was good is supposed to happen before I go claiming he's not a dingo.
It does seem like politics, right? He waited until the tide was totally pushing in this direction, like Obama said it. All the votes came in from consumers like, oh, maybe I can do this and not risk hurting my political career, or at least what he was doing right now. So I don't give him too much credit other than, you know, following where the tide was headed.
Also, it's coming during Obama's last 2 years when Obama has grown a pair on a lot of issues. And even though Wheeler doesn't directly report to Obama, I think it's part of the administration's plan to finally, you know, do what it needs to do. And if the Republicans want to counter it, the Republicans will counter it. But it's standing up and doing the right thing. And we'll have to see what happens, you know, whether Congress does intervene, because it is a political issue. Unfortunately, there are D's and R's on both sides of this issue. But it tends to be D versus R. Not completely, but there are some ideological questions involved in whether the government should be, even to this limited extent, regulating the Internet.
I even feel like among Democrats and liberal geeks, there is some concern about you don't want government regulation. Government, notoriously, and it was designed this way by the founding fathers, is slow, technology adverse for good reason.
Right.
But it operates at a different speed than technology and the Internet. And so I don't think anybody wants heavy-handed government restrictions.
Right. We don't want them picking winners and losers. We don't want them regulating content. I agree with Wheeler that we probably don't even want them regulating rates if we have a free marketplace.
And by the way, and this is an issue that some have raised, he uses the word legal content. He says, this is what I am proposing. I'm submitting to my colleagues the strongest open Internet protections ever proposed by the FCC. These enforceable bright line rules will ban paid prioritization and the blocking and throttling of lawful content and services. Some people have focused on that word lawful and said, well, that's a giant loophole for the copyright police to jump through, for the music industry, the television and movie industry to jump through, to allow ISPs to block BitTorrent, for instance, to do deep packet inspection to make sure that people aren't, you know, sending illegal content over the Internet. Certainly the Snowden papers would be deemed as unlawful content. Probably. WikiLeaks would be deemed by some as unlawful content. So that's going to be interesting to watch how that plays out. He says, though, he is absolutely saying, and, you know, he did this in writing on Wired. He's speaking to geeks when you publish an opinion piece on Wired. He says, We will not regulate rates. There will be no tariffs. I disagree with no last mile unbundling. That's a sop to the cable industry, by the way. Last mile unbundling has happened in the phone industry. That's why you can have many different internet service providers over your DSL lines. You can only have one internet service provider over your cable line, and that's the cable company, Comcast or Time Warner. That's unbundling. He's threw that in there. It completely doesn't fit. One of these things is not like the other. No rate regulation, no tariffs, no last mile unbundling. That's a sop to the cable industry saying, don't worry, guys, you still have a monopoly, which is one of the big problems, frankly.
Right.
Yeah. Baby steps, I guess. I mean,
what he's saying is, I want to support. He says, to preserve incentives for broadband operators to invest in their networks, which means we still want you to make plenty of money on those networks.
Right.
So I agree that the proof will be when the FCC steps up and says, you knock it off. We don't know.
Then for the first time, they also mentioned mobile broadband, which is something the FCC, I think the last time we heard anything related to net neutrality was a couple years ago. They didn't even mention mobile broadband at all. Right. And I feel like at that point, they were kowtowing to the wireless carriers who were arguing that, you know, wireless is so strange and we have to regulate it more. And we have to, like, limit speeds. That's actually something that could mean a lot for people and how they use their phones and tablets over the next couple of years, if it actually happens.
But that was a bit of a shocker because... even Google, in a famous and controversial brief, sided with Verizon, saying, no, mobile's different. You don't have to have net neutrality on mobile. And so that was the fact that he mentioned we're going to do the same. This is mobile and cable was surprising.
But, you know, just to make sure that nobody listening is living under a fool's paradise, none of this says that they can't raise your rates, that they can't control how much data you get to use. That you don't have to pay more for higher speed internet at home. It's really all about content providers' access to the networks and access to people's homes. It really doesn't do anything to protect consumers against having to pay more. As it is, I pay far more for my Comcast bill than my neighbor does because I have the highest package that they offer and my neighbor has a basic package. So I'm already paying probably $50 a month more than my neighbor. And that doesn't go away. Network neutrality has nothing to do with that.
Well, that's fine. I don't think I would want them to get involved in that.
No, I don't either. I just want to make sure people understand that.
What we really want, I think we can all agree, what we really want is for the FCC to foster competition.
Right.
What we really want, and this is why the cable company can screw you, is because they're the only choice. 86% of Americans have only two choices for broadband, your phone company and the cable company, and that's it. 86%. There is no competition. Well, and so I want to see what the FCC is going to do to foster competition. They've already made noise that they're going to go and try to overturn these rules that prevent municipal internet.
Wi-Fi, yeah.
That's huge.
Yep.
If they do that, that might make a big difference.
Plus, they also raised the broadband minimum, right? Or they at least announced
25 megabits.
25.
Yeah, down. So.
A lot of good news, if it happens.
Yeah. I feel like things are moving in the right direction. You saw the recent FTC decision that you cannot sell unlimited data and throttle it.
Yeah.
And it's not...
That's a big deal.
That's a huge deal.
Huge.
I'm unlimited, and I rock about 19 gigs a month, and I get that stupid text message in the middle like, oh, we're about to throttle you. And I'm like, oh, what do you mean you're about to throttle? I'm paying for it. And I mean, I don't even feel the difference. And the speed, to be honest with you, but the fact that I get that stupid text message,
that's really
it
annoying.
Drives me insane.
So what part of unlimited do you not understand, right? Exactly. How do you define the word unlimited? It seems to be pretty clear, right?
Yeah.
I'm not well, they hate, when it comes to language.
And I know that they hate me because no one else uses 19 gigs on their phone.
They do hate you.
It doesn't happen. I understand why they don't like
your PC. You're not even tethering a computer with it. You're actually using it on the phone.
Yeah.
I think that's increasingly the case because people are watching a lot of YouTube.
I have a daughter,
music.
And we drive, so she's in there Netflixing. Yep. I have my own cloud, so I download movies from my cloud. Like
I have to say, that has changed in the last year. I mean, it used to be 3 to 5 gigabytes was a lot.
Yeah.
And if you used more than that, you kind of maybe were a little suspect. Now, I think you're not alone, Owen. I think a lot of people are using more than 10 gigabytes. How much do you use, Chris?
Switch to like a 30 gig plan.
His family had to switch to a 30 gig plan because you're what, 17? He uses 10 gigabytes a month.
They do too.
It's their fault too. I agree.
So AT&T just upped my plan from 10 gigabytes to 15 at the same price, and I'm pushing up against it on some months. It depends on if I travel a lot, I push up against it.
Actually, chat room is starting to weigh in, and I think a lot of the people in the chat room, of course, you guys probably are heavier consumers than most because you watch a lot of streaming Twit. If nothing else.
Nothing else. Nothing.
If you stream Twit on a high quality connection all day, all night, you're talking 30 gigabytes a month.
That's tough, yeah. And yet we're talking wireless right now, but my parents are actually in one of the test markets for Comcast's throttling on in-home broadband. And it's kind of ridiculous. Mm-hmm. Like once they hit 300 gigabytes in their home, They have to start paying another $10 for every, I think, 10 more gigabytes or something like that.
Wow.
It's their bill has started to skyrocket because of that, and they had to go down to like the business version of Comcast.
I'm shocked.
Internet.
I thought that Comcast stopped doing that.
No, they're testing it in Atlanta and a couple other markets right now. It's still going. It's ridiculous.
Did your parents opt into that program, or did they force them into that
program? No, that's just that was their home internet plan. And I think eventually they started testing that out in Atlanta. It's so weird.
I remember when they were proposing 250 gigabyte per month caps, and they were going to roll it out and different test it. And then I heard Comcast say, no, that's not worked out. But they're still doing
it. If they want to offer you that service at a great discount, you know, as an option, you know, hey, $10 a month, you get a cap. I wouldn't mind as an option, but if they're forced into that, it's horrible.
It happened. They didn't know why it happened. I think they just started seeing the extra, additions to their bill. And they had to bump down to the business class version of Comcast Internet, which I think is only 10 or 15 megabits. They were at like 25 before.
Avenger, I know a good realtor, and for only $10 or $15 million, they can buy a house here in Palo Alto.
Atlanta is so much cheaper. Yeah.
That's true. It's probably worth it.
Wow. Well, again, this argues for competition because – had they another good choice, another high-speed choice in Atlanta, they could say, well, screw you, Comcast. But they can't.
Google. I need Google.
I think Google – we got to rattle Google's cage because initially they said Google Fiber. We're just showing what we can do in Austin and a few towns and Kansas City. But they're adding cities. And I'm wondering if Google's starting to think maybe this is a good business. Maybe people do want gigabit. You know, it's interesting. In the towns where Google Fiber is, like Austin, all of a sudden Time Warner and Comcast are saying, oh, we can do that.
Mm-hmm.
Sorry. You want that?
That's a competition you want. You need somebody else outside of the box saying, hey, I put 12 eggs in the basket. They're only giving you 10, the same price. Don't you want 12? Who doesn't want two free extra eggs?
It also solves net neutrality. Because if Comcast is throttling your Skype because they have a VoIP solution, you can also go somewhere else. But you need more than two. You need more than three. You need a few. And you need some upstarts. You need companies like SonicNet. And we had Dane Jasper on Twit, the founder of SonicNet, talking in this debate over net neutrality. And guys like that they want this. If they could get into every house, they are thrilled to say, we'll offer unthrottled.
And the problem is that we only have two companies that run wires into your house, right? The phone company and the cable company. Right. So unless you do it wireless, even if you have the deal that the carriers that work with the phone company that allow them to piggyback on the phone company's wires.
MVNOs.
Yeah. Even they have to use the same wires and the phone companies control the speed because they control
the
speed, you know, at that point.
In towns like Chattanooga, where they have established high-speed internet owned by the city, city owns the wires and the water, and then Chattanooga says, okay, and we'll manage the infrastructure, and anybody who wants to become an internet service provider on top of this infrastructure can. That works,
right?
And of course, immediately Chattanooga, the big ISPs tried to shut this down, make it illegal.
It'd be like privatizing the road system in every town, right? I mean, we have certain things that we have agreed can be public. And in fact, doesn't LA still own a municipal water and power? I think LA, Palo Alto, the water and power is all city owned. And that's been that way forever. And you're going to tell us we can't have a municipal internet system? Why not? It's an infrastructure. It's no different than a bridge or a road or an electrical system.
Look at this. This is
what the city wants.
ChattanoogaGig.com. This is the website of the city of Chattanooga, Tennessee. Your gig is here, right here in Chattanooga. 1 gigabit per second internet available to every home, every business, 150,000 of them throughout the entire community, urban or rural, business or residence. I mean, this is fantastic.
I'm going to sell my house and move to Chattanooga, and I'll be rich.
And here's an interesting point. It makes Chattanooga a pretty desirable city, doesn't it?
It does.
It's good for business. It's good for real estate. It's good for everything. It's an open platform. And, of course, the first thing Verizon and Comcast try to do is shut this sucker down. Go ahead.
That's why we need it so badly, because for Google and their whole, I want to make a social network and do all this, all the little companies they're trying to build and acquire and steal, just roll this out. You will make money. People need television. People need internet. And people are desperate for another option in so many cities. People in San Francisco, out where you live, They hate everything about the internet that they have to use. And that's the mecca of internet and computer and technology. Right, and it's just evil out there. And it makes absolutely no sense. Roll it out. Make some money.
I think it seems just very difficult, right? Because Verizon announced a couple of years ago that they were going to stop rolling out the fiber installations, right? If you have Fios in your neighborhood, that's pretty much it. It's not going to get much further than that. And if Verizon, you know, one of the biggest mobile carriers and one of the biggest ISPs in the country, can't even roll out more fiber or chooses not to, I don't know how a smaller company will. It takes
That's what you have to ask. Why did Verizon do it in the first place, and why did they stop doing it?
What they did here was
widely agreed. It was a political move. They never intended to roll it out everywhere, but they wanted to curry favor with the FCC. Verizon's been in a lot of trouble with the FCC. So there may be some question about their motives from beginning to end on this. Mm-hmm. I am thrilled that Wheeler has also said we are going to enforce rules that prevent legislatures from making it illegal for municipalities to create their own Wi-Fi. They're on the verge of killing that too. And the state laws that would prevent municipal broadband, like Chattanooga's, and I think that's fabulous. That's what we need. Mm-hmm. That's what if the FCC continues down that road, then I don't care about Comcast, Time Warner, Verizon, and the rest. There'll be competition.
Yeah,
right.
We need competition.
Yep.
Anyway, we're going to take a break. Come back with more. Lots more to talk about. We got Larry Magid here. Safer Kids. That's his thing, man.
Safe. Oh, safekids.com, Safer Internet Day. I don't know. It's confusing.
Safer, whatever.
Yeah, whatever.
Go to Connect Safely. Connect Safely. I actually recommend this on the radio show all the time because parents call up and they say, I got teenagers. You know, how can I prevent them? How can I prevent them from misusing the internet? And I say, you can't prevent them, but you can talk to them. And I point them to your website, safekids.org, and you've got contracts there that parents can pull out for younger kids or older kids and say, look, this is our approved internet policy. Let's talk about this. That's the best way to handle it. Yeah.
By the way, it's safekids.com or connectsafely.org just to get the URLs right.
Okay.
Sorry about
safekids.com.
that. Safekids.com. Right.
That's the one. Safely. Just remember that.
Yep. That's good enough. That'll get you there.
Owen J.J. Stone, how old is your daughter?
She is 7.
She uses the internet?
38. Yes, she's all over the internet.
What do you do to protect her?
I have her on all Apple devices that I can look on my phone and see what web pages she's gone to.
Oh, so you keep an eye on it?
Yeah, anytime she takes a picture on her cell phone, it backs up to me. Anytime she's on her iPad, it backs up to me.
That's not going to work much longer. You know that, Jay.
How old is she?
She's 7. So let me tell you about the world that I live in.
Wait till 17. Forget it.
17? Wait till 12.
Look, dude, I tell you what. I'll be doing so much espionage. When I was a kid, my dad used to sneak in my room. He put a little green film over a flashlight and go in and look through my notebook and my journal and be reading in the middle of the night like I didn't see him doing it. I'm going to be spying on her so bad she's going to wish the NSA would come in here and slow me down. So y'all can say whatever you want. My daughter's in jiu-jitsu. She's in soccer. She's in basketball. When she goes out on a date, they're going to be like, Mr. Stone, bring her back at 9:30. You going to come on when she wants to. She's an international spy and ninja. She will break your neck. I'm going to be all up in her grill. So I'm not worried about safety. It's these other kids we got to worry about on the 3DSs and the computers the parents don't pay. It's all about parents paying attention, and I'll be paying attention.
I agree with you. Does a computer – and you'll be wearing those shades. Is the computer in a public place so that's one thing that makes a big difference.
She has a MacBook Air, of course, because all Macs.
So she can go anywhere.
She has her MacBook Air. She puts it in her room when she's here. When she's not here, she leaves on the kitchen table. So when she leaves out, it comes out of her room onto the table.
Good. Right. Well, our policy, the policy we recommend, my kids are grown up, is that when kids go to sleep, their devices go to sleep with them. Not with them, but devices go to sleep also.
Yeah.
So you charge the phones in a central place of the house. We used to say, put a computer in the public part of the house, but that doesn't work anymore because everybody got phones.
Yeah, everything's mobile.
But you can insist that the phones be charged in the living room or the kitchen wherever you put them. They shouldn't be playing with them when they should be sleeping. Yeah. And by the way, Leo, that goes for you and me too. We should
no.
We should be messing with our phones.
No.
Screen watching in the middle of the night.
it disrupts your sleep. There's evidence about that. Even if you're watching good stuff.
No.
Screens disrupt your sleep. Yes,
I like
Leo.
To check Instagram at 4 in the morning. That's my right as a U.S. citizen.
You have the right to have really
Leo
crap
listens
sleep.
To lullaby music at night. What is he going to do? Play his lullaby
You know
music?
What we've been doing lately? There's this app on Android and iOS called Pizzizz, P-Z-I-Z-Z. And you play it and it goes, you're now relaxing and going to sleep. You'll have good dreams. You will not wake up and go on Instagram. And that's very relaxing. But then at 4 in the morning.
I use Headspace to meditate, believe it or not. I've never meditated in my entire life, but I have this app that I got. I think it's like $80 a year after 10 free trials. And it actually, I don't know if I'm meditating, but this guy relaxes me, right? He talks in this really calming voice and tells me to breathe. And by the time he's done, I'm kind of half asleep.
It's a gym membership for your mind.
Exactly.
Be careful with pizzazz, because that's how I brainwash people. I talk to them in the middle of the night.
I figure.
And you wake up then doing all kinds of stuff. Your bank account will be empty. I have an Audi in my driveway.
Yeah. I think about an hour in, they're going, you will send money to our post office box. You will be happy about this.
Yes, sir.
Yeah. Yes, sir. No, actually, we used to do that when the kids were little. We would set the Apple router, and many other routers will do this. OpenDNS.com does this. You could set an access control list, and you can say, internet goes off at 10 p.m.
Right.
And Jennifer and I used to sit there at 9:59. We go, wait for it, wait for it. Dad!
Exactly.
The internet's off! Yes, I know. Go to bed.
When my kids were little, the router and the cable TV connections all went through my office. So I would do the thing, exactly the same thing. I'd unplug, Dad! Well, told you to get off. You know,
Dad! Power.
Dad had some power in the house. Not much,
but he had the power of that switch. Devendra Hardawar, you don't have to worry about that. You don't have any little kids running around there, little rugrats running around there.
No. I have two cats, and they do use the internet, but I don't have to, like, monitor them. Or
I think it's okay if cats' minds are polluted.
Sorry. Cats and keyboard internet, that's all that plays in my head. I'm sorry.
I think Keyboard Cat passed, didn't he? I think he did.
Oh, this is sad.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah.
Oh, thanks. Thanks, Uncle Leo.
But thanks to the internet, Keyboard Cat lives on forever. So that's okay.
That's okay.
Yeah. Charlie Schmidt, the original Keyboard Cat.
Aww.
The days when the internet was young.
Silent Kettle. That cat is a winner. I'm going to get that cat a record deal. You can drive for me anytime. I love Keyboard Cat.
Is this the first cat video ever?
I think this was the first one to go super viral, but there were plenty before that.
38 million views of Keyboard Cat. Wait a minute. What the hell's going on now? He's going dubstep cat. Devendra Hardawar, Engadget.com. Our show today brought to you by Oscar, a new approach to healthcare. This is cool. You know, I think we got a problem in this country with healthcare, and I think we need to modernize it. And I'm very intrigued by what Oscar is doing. Now, unfortunately, it's only available right now if you live in New York or New Jersey. But if you live in New York or New Jersey and you need health insurance, I want you to check out Oscar. They have an app. They make health insurance simpler, more intuitive, more human. Their IT, the engineers used to work at Tumblr, okay? At Spotify, at Google. So their websites are like slick and usable. They have these great apps. Part of their customer app, they develop a personal timeline. And I wish I could do this. I love this. That lets you track your medical history over time. So your doctor appointments, your visit notes are visible on there. Your prescriptions, if you do phone calls with your doctor, those are there. You can, of course, use it to find doctors and care in your area. You can search by location, languages spoken, hospital affiliation. iOS right now, Android's coming soon. They recently launched, this is cool, a Misfit fitness tracker. And it provides financial incentives if you are active. It pays you. So if you reach your daily step count, you get $1. $1! Once you hit $20, you can cash out with an Amazon gift card. You can keep doing this until you hit the limit is $240 a year.
So much money in claims by doing that. They're paying themselves.
They're paying themselves because
they don't need doctors as much. It's a great idea.
It's so brilliant. Health insurance, there are a lot of health insurers, their goal is just to palm you off, like put off your illness because they know you're going to move on and then just, we don't want to keep you healthy. We just want to keep you healthy while you're our customer. And then it's okay.
See, I think what we need is health insurance companies should also have to be life insurance companies.
I agree.
If you die,
they have an investment in you. Yeah, so exactly. This is brilliant. Oscar really wants to reinvent this. I wish we were in California, New York, or New Jersey only. Their plans include free checkups, some free generic drugs, free primary care, doctor visits. You don't need a referral to get care. Oscar's doctor on call gives you access to a board-certified doctor 24/7. Just kills me that I can't be a customer. But if you are in New York or New Jersey, hioscar.com/twit or call 844-OSCAR-25. That's toll free. 844-OSCAR-25. Sign up by the 15th. You'll be insured by the 1st of the following month. So that works out pretty well. Is it open enrollment now? I think it is. hioscar.com/twit or call 844-OSCAR-25. And get the Misfit Fitness Tracker. But it's only for Oscar customers.
They're making waves out here. I had a friend who's in New York who was unhappy with their healthcare provider, and they asked who. And I didn't know what Oscar was, because I look it up because I'm already good for the moment. But I saw like 12 people put in Oscar. So I was like, they must be doing okay. So
we love – most of our advertisers are like this, where they're taking existing businesses and using the internet to kind of reinvent it.
Yeah.
And that's, to me, one of the most exciting uses of the internet here, is just to kind of break down everything. Start over. Let's start over and rethink all this stuff.
I started shaving with Harry's. I mean, you know, it's great. I mean, I don't get paid to say this, right? I mean, I buy stuff from them. But, it saves me money, and they have great customer care. I call them up. There's this lady named Kate who tells me how to shave.
Really?
Yeah.
Wait a minute. You call and you say, how do I shave, Kate?
Well, I wasn't sure how you clean. What's the best? I still haven't figured this out. What's the best way to clean a razor? Like, you get the hairs, right, in these razors. And she explained to me the best way to get the hairs out. It still doesn't work quite as well as it
How?
Ever. Well, you put it so it's backwards, so that the water goes on the back of the blade.
You sluice into the front. High pressure water through the back of it. Yeah.
But I do it in the bathtub now because I get really super high pressure. But that's the one thing that I hope Harry's, if they're listening, that they can figure out a way to invent a razor that doesn't.
They need like an eject button. You push the button, like, and it ejects the hairs.
Exactly, and it ought to be out.
The nice thing is, because Harry's Blades, and this is not a Harry's ad because they didn't buy an ad today, but the nice thing is Harry's Blades are less expensive, so I just change my blades more often. That's another solution, right? It's nice to have a fresh blade all the time.
And by the way, you have a lovely shave. You look very nice and clean shave today.
Thank you. That's Harry's.
Nice haircut, too.
Yeah.
Great haircut.
Actually can't blame Harry's for the haircut. Because
that was good.
I got it shaved once with a lady with a straight razor, and that was really...
That's the best way to do it.
Oh, it's great. It was like I was a pumpkin, and she was carving me. It was like... And then what you don't know, there's a whole bunch of stuff you learn when you get your head shaved, is that you can hear it. It's because it's... But from bone conductance, you really hear the razor scraping you.
I used to have this barber who had very different politics than me, and we get into these political discussions.
Oh, no.
Scared the crap out of me. Having,
you like Obama, eh?
Exactly.
No.
I always worried those guys. No, I don't let them near my throat.
When I'm getting cut with a straight razor, I don't have a conversation about anything. I don't want to talk about anything. I don't want to know.
Oh, you're a Steelers fan, eh?
You need to focus. I don't hear anything about anything.
Do not. All I can say, Owen, never go to a barber who's a Cowboys fan, because you have been so relentlessly brutal to the Dallas Cowboys.
No haircuts in Texas. When I go to Austin, I got to bring my own equipment.
You must never, ever go to Texas again. Moving along, Apple TV. This is an ongoing story, but maybe because of the Sling TV, they have reignited Apple's conversations with broadcasters. Recode reports Apple is once again talking to TV programmers about putting its own web TV, what they call it, an over-the-top service, on Apple TV. It's over-the-top because it eliminates your cable television or antenna, and you get your TV, as you do Netflix now, over the internet. Sling has offered this Sling TV product. We've talked about it before. $20 a month, you get ESPN, which means you get actual sports. You get CNN, which means you get actual news.
In your opinion.
Okay. All right. You're right. What am I thinking? You're absolutely right.
Throw a zinger in there, brother. You can't just be throwing out CNN.
No, you're absolutely right.
Like,
but anybody who gets their news from TV is certified nuts anyway, right?
Yeah.
There's nowhere. Also, now with Brian Williams. What's this with Brian Williams?
My heart.
Yeah.
He broke my heart.
I love Brian Williams
so much. Yeah. And now your dad's a criminal and a horrible person. And and the worst part is, well, he did it for entertainment. The news is not entertainment.
No, that's the problem.
What are you talking about?
Be true.
This is entertainment. The news is not entertainment.
You evil,
I think,
silly.
You should get your news from radio. That's where you should get your news from. From CBS News Radio. No, but people.
That's a little self-serving, Larry, but I actually agree with you.
What you really need to do is you need to get your news from multiple sources. You need to go online.
Well, thank God for the internet. You can actually go to direct to. I mean, I feel like we get much better news now because we do that.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Both of us who do get that.
Well, doesn't everybody?
Not everybody.
Still not everyone, yeah.
The older people in the world are set in their ways.
Oh, well, they're screwed anyway. Anybody over 50, how old am I now? Anybody over 58 is screwed.
Now anymore, whenever I read something, I literally have to go to another news source to reread it to make sure it's even somewhat legit.
Right.
Because
right.
People just post stuff and it's like, oh, blah, blah, blah. I'm like, did Jesus come down and write this on a wall for you? Because I don't see it anywhere else online. Nowhere else has said it but this place. And then
even 2 hours later, the post is gone. You know, it used to be if you went to a trusted news brand, you knew it was probably true. And even there, I can't think of examples. Well,
Brian Williams is a perfect example. That's NBC News. Well,
no, you expect them to be accurate. Yes.
Whoever wrote that, because you have to write statements before you say them out loud. So the fact that you can literally think in a room somewhere to say, well, we were doing it for entertainment purposes. How does someone in that room not slap you? Because you can't come out and say things like that. Like, you have a... Oh, God. I'm sorry.
Now that Comcast owns NBC, somebody in the chat room is making a very good point. It is an entertainment network,
but the news
right?
division... Okay, so I actually do work for a news division. I work for CBS News. And the news division, at least we're in the radio, I can't speak for television, really does operate independently. I mean, I don't know what happens at the boardroom.
No, I agree with you. Especially, you're on the Tiffany Network. You're on Edward R. Murrow's... Tiffany Network.
And the level that I work at, nobody tells me what to cover. I mean, nobody tells me what to say. As long as I'm accurate, as long as I'm well-sourced, as long as I'm not way out in left field, I'm good. And it doesn't matter whether it's a company that CBS is in suing or anything else. I know there were problems. But in the news division, we haven't had that problem, at least in the part that I'm at.
Knock on wood. I don't think it's going to last.
Well, and you just don't say it. If you're doing it for entertainment, don't say it. Don't insult your craft.
That the internet natives, this generation growing up, basically has had to learn. Actually, this is a good skill. Had to learn that you always look at what's the underlying motivation, mm-hmm. what's the slant, where is this coming from, every news source,
everything.
And that's actually, I think that's why the New York Times and the NBC and the traditional news stalwarts are starting to fall, because that skepticism, which is needed on the internet, is now being applied globally. And it's right. It should be.
It is right. Mm-hmm. And everybody should be checked, even you and me, Leo. I mean, everybody.
Oh, I get checked all the time, believe me. I go home and.
It should be.
Yeah. That's right. Yeah. Right.
It should be.
And you know, everybody makes mistakes. You shouldn't lie, but everybody makes mistakes, and when I make a mistake, I will correct it.
So here's a weird concept that most people would probably think is odd. I actually consider access to media to be a sacred trust. I know that sounds very naive and idealistic, but I really feel that if people are taking the time to read me or to listen to me or to watch me, I have a moral obligation to do the best job I can, to be accurate, to be fair. If I have a conflict of interest, to disclose it. As I do, because I admit that my Connect Safely is funded by some of the tech companies, but that's right there in every article. And, you know, as long as you do that, then you can sleep at night. But anything short of that, I think is a violation of a trust. And I know a lot of people think that that's crap because they think the media is nothing but a big corporate business. But maybe I'm just old and I'm a part of a dying breed, but I strongly feel that way.
But you feel that way, but do you think the Huffington Post feels that way?
Can't speak for my friend Ariana. You know?
I feel like that people who communicate on the internet maybe don't have that tradition of sacred trust.
Actually, you know, the answer to your question about Huffington Post, it depends who the blogger is. I mean, there are many. I blog for the Huffington Post. There are many bloggers in the Huffington Post that really are great, and there's some staff people who are phenomenal. But when you have an open blog network, you know, it's an open blog, and lots of people do it.
It's click mania. You know, they write. I feel like half the posts are written anymore aren't even articles that are written. They say something like, oh, such and such died. What do you think? And they basically put out there, so 4,000 people put comments on it and click.
I'm like,
you didn't write anything. That's a lot of effort. You asked me a question.
How about this one?
You post 40 articles a day like that.
How about this one? And I talked about this before the show. A couple of weeks ago, I wanted to know when the Super Bowl kickoff actually was. Mm-hmm. So I Google, what time does the Super Bowl start? That is an eye-opener, because what you get is a lot of sites, including, by the way, the Huffington Post, the IB Times, the LA Times, who create bogus pages that tell you what time the Super Bowl starts. That is not a news story.
They know what's going to be, that people are going to be searching.
They know people are going to search for this. Oh. Mm-hmm. So they create pages that will show high on Google that you will click on. Here's the Huffington Post. And then they put ads all over it.
Yeah.
Because you don't need a news story titled, what time does the Super Bowl start?
Right.
That is not a story you would see in the New York Times.
We're doing it wrong, Uncle Leo. We need to get on this ASAP.
Well, that was, 50-50. Of course, my first reaction is, God damn it, why didn't I think of that?
Well, you know, funny thing is, I asked my Android phone. I said, okay, Google, what time did the Super Bowl start? And it told me 3 p.m., but I wasn't sure what time zone. I think, but Google was smart enough to know what time zone I was in.
Yeah.
But I wasn't 100% sure whether it had been Pacific, Eastern, Arizona.
You know what I tried for the first time last night, and actually I was pretty impressed. Amazon's Alexa, you know, the Echo, the thing that's in your house.
Ooh, you got that?
The tube. One of our editors, Anthony Nielsen, got one, and Mike Elgin has it in his house and is reviewing it. We were over for dinner. You know what? It's pretty cool. I immediately asked for an invitation, because if you're a Prime member, it's only $99. First of all, the sound quality is good. And Alexa's pretty smart. You can ask it questions, and she will answer in a nice, natural voice. It didn't sound robotic. It's like a little pal in your kitchen, and you can ask them things like, literally, what time does the Super Bowl start? We asked, how old is Michael Jackson? This is a good one. And it said, well, she said in a nice, natural, human, female voice, Michael Jackson died in whatever, 2010, but he was 50 when he died. Actually, he said he was 50 years, 8 months, 29 hours, and 3 seconds old when he died. It was very interesting. It was. I'm amazed that Google hasn't done this. Mm-hmm. And when I first saw it, I said, this is stupid. Who would want this? And now I want this in every room. In fact, we were all saying, you know who should, Amazon should buy Sonos. Mm-hmm. Those are the speakers that are in every room. And build
that
this into Sonos.
Awesome.
And then as you walk through your life, you go, hey, Alexa, and they would tell you.
Smart house, really smart house.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
2001, Space Odyssey is here.
Right.
Google's mission was to put in your phone. I think that was the thing. And they didn't want a separate device for people.
I agree,
but
they missed they missed the boat because of it.
Mm-hmm. Perhaps, yeah.
I'm going to have to order one of this.
We'll see how many people outside of our bubble that would want to have that in their house. So
maybe, yeah. But I think if you try it, it kind of surprises you.
No. I'm totally down for it, besides the fact that I feel like it's probably going to make my child a little bit slower. Thankfully, she has me, that I'm a super genius. I'm going to make her smart. But
wait a minute. I mean, it's just like having you there. You go, hey, Daddy, what time does the Super Bowl start? And you tell her.
Okay, so perfect example. She's learning to read and write, right? So she has words every week. Now she has to form her own sentences. What used to happen was, she would ask me to reread her sentences. I would help her. And so I'd get out a dictionary, or I'd pull a dictionary up online, and I'd make her read it, and she'd understand it. Now, do you know what I hear in the other room? I hear, okay, Google, how do you spell ancient?
What's wrong with that?
Okay, Siri. Because she's not looking up the definitions like I'd make her do.
Yeah.
She's just getting the direct word, and she skipped me completely.
Jay, you're just jealous because Google is smarter than you are, at least more knowledgeable. It knows more than you do. Let's face it. It really does.
If I could program Google to make her read the definition out loud, I'd be happy with Google. But Google just gives the direct answer and moves on. I'm trying to educate.
They should have a Google student mode.
Oh, that'd be awesome.
Where it says, well, I'm going to tell you the answer in a minute, but first do this math problem.
That's called goggles. They've got that for drunks at night.
Google goggles.
Text their ex.
Yeah.
anything to make them think more.
Yeah.
So
I'll tell you how to spell it in a moment. But first, this word from the Holy Roman Empire.
I almost got mad, but she's so smart. I got mad when I first heard it. I heard, okay, Google, how do you spell ancient? And I'm looking around like, wait, what? How long has she been doing it? Because I realized my mom, she hadn't been asking me to help her with her homework in like 2 weeks. And she had figured out, because, you know, she'll ask me questions like, how many people are in the world? I'm like, oh, ask
but
Siri.
See,
ask
I Google. Feel like this may be a change in, kind of a big change in how we think of knowledge. That the facts, because they're at your fingertips at all times, are no longer important.
They're commodities.
Because they're commodities because you can get the fact. You can get the spelling of ancient anytime.
Yeah.
You can get the definition of ancient anytime.
Yeah.
And so memorizing all of that stuff is now no longer important. And I don't think that's such a bad thing.
And education, schools need to adapt to that. I mean, if I were a teacher these days, I would give all open web exams. Every exam, I'd say, don't tell me what year the world
isn't knowing what question to ask and where to ask it more important.
Tell me why does it matter?
Right.
You know, why does it matter? Not who.
It's not memorization. It's thinking that we need to teach.
Right. Yeah. I mean, and I think that that would be the way I would teach, but they don't let me teach anymore.
I remember my late father-in-law who we gave him an iPad, and he was enthralled. He was a school teacher, was a science teacher, and he was enthralled by it. He loved it. And he said, you know, Copernicus spent most of his energy grinding lenses and manufacturing telescopes so that he could observe the heavens, so that he could figure out that the Earth revolved around the sun. Nowadays, all of the information that he needed is available without any effort. How much more can people figure out because they don't have to spend the time grinding the lenses and making the telescopes? It was an interesting insight.
A long, long time ago, I was a graduate student. This was my dissertation back in the 80s. Right?
What was your dissertation in?
It was
you wrote that big book?
Well, it's mostly charts and graphs. Yeah, I did. But the point is that I spent most of my time in graduate school going up and down the elevator to get between the card catalog and the stacks. I don't think I learned anything other than riding the elevator.
You were good at the elevator, though.
I was good at the elevator. I was able to, crunch out a long dissertation. But the point is that the knowledge is so much easier to acquire now, and that means we need to be smarter in how we use it.
Let's learn thinking.
Exactly.
Or Dewey Decimal System.
Yeah, isn't that funny? You don't need that anymore. My alma mater at Yale, the beautiful library, Sterling Library, just got remodeled. And I remember that the entire entryway, huge acres, was filled with card catalogs.
Right.
They're gone. They're couches and computer terminals, and it's cozy places to read and study. It's like I wouldn't recognize it. There's no card catalog.
Can you cuddle on those couches if you have a partner? Yeah, that's good. It's better than a card catalog.
Mm-hmm. A lot comfier anyway.
Yeah, true.
Let's take a break. Come back with more. Devinder, we got to get you in the conversation. Just chime in. Don't let these loudmouths
jump in.
We're bullies.
It's okay. It's fine. I like hearing what you guys are doing. But, you know, to what you're saying about the way we're treating knowledge now, for me, I'm excited about how this will unleash creativity in people. You know, everyone's poo-pooing the fact that we're memorizing less, but that could be a good thing if it kind of gives you time to do something more interesting. Yeah,
learn how to think, not to memorize. Right. Although memorization is fun. Learn instead of memorizing facts, memorize a poem so you can have a poem in your head.
Especially as I get older, my memory's failing anyway. So
there's a great.
We're all augmented.
There's an awesome iPad app that I really love that helps you memorize poems. Hmm. And it has you're a better man than I am, Gunga Din, and I memorize. I don't know if I still remember it. Ozymandias, it does line by line. Bring me my iPad because I want to remember what that app is. But it's so fun.
Bring me my pipe.
Bring me my pipe and my slippers.
I memorize
and
all my
Fiddler's Three.
I memorize all my poetry via Tupac songs. So,
that's not bad. Music is the best way to learn poetry. I wonder if I still have it on here. It was such a cool app. And I think that's a fun thing to do. Of course, I'm a little weird. Oh, he brought me my slippers, too. Thank you. And there's my pipe. Okay, now I'm ready.
Wait, you have a pipe? I was joking.
You do know this is Twit, right? We're out here reading sonnets.
In about a moment, Fiddlers 3 are going to show up, and then you'll be impressed, won't you?
Does the government allow us to smoke pipes on television? Oh, we're not on television.
We are not on television.
Not on real television.
You know, I had to take, and you probably have to do this too for CBS, the FCC exam.
That's right. I had to take it. Yep.
Every year, we have to take
the... I don't study for it. Don't tell them that. I pass it every year, though.
They give you a PowerPoint presentation. I got 100%, by the way.
Good for you.
They tell you things like what you can do and not do and so forth. And then, so I circulated to the staff because I said, it's probably a good idea for you to know. Jason, I sent you a copy. It's a good idea for you to know what the broadcast standards are, because we try to adhere to broadcast standards. Mm-hmm. But just, you know, there's no FCC looking over our shoulder yet. Yeah.
Right.
What a lot of it's common sense, too.
It's common sense. Yeah. But there's things like contesting. What's a legal contest? What's a lottery? You know, there's a lot of good stuff in there. You know what? The best thing is how disclaimers about advertising and Plugola.
That was good.
For instance, you cannot lie when in an endorsement ad. If you don't use a product, you cannot go on the radio and say, I use that product.
Really?
You get a huge fine.
Ooh.
Yeah.
How did they figure that out? Police-wise, that'd be interesting.
Well, yeah, there's another. Does the FCC have
But the Federal Trade Commission also goes after bloggers that misrepresent themselves.
Started a little Twitter feed called Inside Twit, where we were occasionally mentioning advertisers. And Denise Howell, who has become our corporate attorney, she does This Week in Law on the network, said, you know, you really have to. The FTC is, the fines are immense. You really have to have hashtag sponsor or hashtag ads. Or you have to make it clear that these even if they didn't pay for that tweet, that these people are sponsored. And I had 100% behind it.
Yes,
I just hadn't thought about it.
Has Twit ever had a wardrobe malfunction? Have you been careful about that?
My nipples are constantly on the air. It's embarrassing.
Yeah. Terrible.
Terrible.
I would say $1 million fine in your case each time.
I'm not going to find this poetry app. Before the end of the show, I'll figure out what it is. It's probably not on here anymore, but it was so much
fun. If not, it'll be in the show notes.
We don't have show notes. It's another thing we got to get. Remember show notes?
Show notes.
Remember when podcasts had show notes?
Show notes.
I put my slippers on while I talk a little bit about stamps.com. You know, you might say, hey, I need some postage. I need some stamps. Oh, shoot. I have to put on pants and shoes and go to the post office. No. With stamps.com, you can keep your slippers on, keep your pants off, and print your own legal U.S. postage whenever you need it, 24/7, and you don't need a postage meter, with your computer and your printer. Stamps.com brings all the services of the United States Postal Service to your desk. You even get discounts you can't get at the post office, like First Class, Priority Mail, Express, International. You'll never pay full price for postage again at stamps.com. That's why 500,000 small businesses use stamps.com. We do too. It also makes your mailing, if you do mailing of any kind in business, it makes it look more professional. You could print right on the envelopes with your company logo, the postage. It'll automatically pull the sender's, your return address, but also the recipient's address from QuickBooks or your address book. If you're selling on eBay, Etsy, Amazon, any of the websites, it'll get that information directly from the site. It'll even fill out international customs forms automatically. Certified mail, return receipt. It'll automatically email the recipient with a tracking code. It makes your mail look as professional as those big companies. Better, really. With stamps.com, you print barcoded postage, return and delivery addresses all in one step. On shipping labels, your company logo right on the label. Stamps.com. Now, we got a really great deal for you. I hope you're sold on the value of stamps.com. Now I want you to try it with a no-risk trial offer. This is worth $110. Go to the front page at stamps.com. Go to our offer. Click the microphone and enter the offer code TWIT. $110 bonus offer. That includes $55 free postage. You get a USB scale. This is so cool. So you never guess at the postage again. You never overpay or underpay. You know, I don't know which is worse, putting an extra stamp on because you just don't want to have postage due, or I guess it's worse to have a package arrive and your customer has to pay extra. I get all the time. I get PR, you know, little boxes from PR firms where I have to pay, like, because they didn't put enough stamps on it. It's like, that's so ridiculous. I don't get stamps.com. Get the scale. $50 free postage. A month free use of stamps.com. You're going to love this. Stamps.com. Before you do anything else, click the microphone at the top of the homepage and type into it. Look, I used to have hair. That actually looks like a rug.
Yeah, that doesn't look real. That's not legit.
Yeah.
That's a piece.
I think Leo really is bald.
I think he is too.
Stamps.com. Please use the offer code TWIT. Please, I beg of you. Self-driving cars, always fun. Google is developing its own Uber competitor, but that's okay because Uber is developing self-driving cars. They've done a deal with Carnegie Mellon to do self. But so really, here's the future 10 years out. when you call a cab or an Uber or a Goober, whatever Google calls their Goober would be a good name. When you call a Goober, it pulls up and there's nobody inside.
Right.
At least not to worry about somebody roughing you up after
That's
your
true.
Ride.
That's true. Hey, baby, you gonna go downtown? You know what I mean?
Yeah, you live here?
You live here? Is this where you live? You got a boyfriend? None of that. And so I think this is but do you think people are ready for this? Do you think?
Not yet.
Would you get scared if the taxi pulled up and there's nobody in it?
I'd actually feel safer if the technology actually worked because I would know that human error has been reduced.
Yeah.
But also it depends on the on the system that they're operating in. I get a little nervous about a self-driving car on the same highway as cars driven by human beings. But ultimately, I think it's going to be a lot safer. I'm actually looking forward to that. When I grow really old, I want to have a self-driving car or at least a service that comes to pick me up.
Uncle Leo, buy me a Tesla. Give me a Tesla, please.
Why?
I will test out this self-driving thing. I'll drive across the country.
I think you misunderstand. Teslas do not self-drive.
I know, but I just want a Tesla, and I want to be able to drive it myself and have it somewhat drive for me while I'm in there being lazy. I'm trying to get myself a Tesla. Don't worry about the facts. Okay, this is America.
Devendra, didn't Tesla, didn't they show like a car that would read speed signs and stuff like that?
I think they showed some basic technology like that. And we know for a fact that they're actually working on more self-driving technology. But what I saw at CES this year was every car company is doing something that's kind of automated.
Yeah.
So Audi is working on it. BMW is working on it. There's stuff on the road today, like the parallel parking assistant. So people are going to get more and more used to it. So I think in 10 years, a car pulls up in front of you. You know it's your requested Uber or whatever. People will be totally down with it.
So I recently had a chance to interview the CEO of Ford because they opened up a research lab in Silicon Valley. And, you know, they're no longer calling themselves an automaker. They're now a mobility company.
Wow.
Oh, wow.
And they even have research going on with bicycles. And so the whole thing, it's like car companies are learning to be like remember the old days when we talked about a railroad and then the smart railroads became transportation companies.
Right.
The smart radio networks became media companies.
You know, that's true. Clear Channel, who owns, I do my radio show on the Premier Networks, which is owned by Clear Channel, no longer is called Clear Channel because that implies radio. It's called iHeart Media.
It's about media.
Which is terrible, by the way. iHeart Media, isn't that it? iHeart Media. Isn't that kind of dated?
But Ford is about mobility now. They're no longer about cars and trucks. And it's really smart. I mean, they've got to start thinking about how it is we want to get from place to place, whether it's a bicycle, whether it's a car, whether it's a self-driving car, whether it's hopping on the back of a robot, whatever it takes, the car companies that are smart are going to adapt themselves to it.
Hamster MH in our chat room says, I want a self-loathing car.
I already have one of those. It's when me driving it poorly.
I just hate myself.
To your iHeart Media, that's again my point of people sitting in a room not knowing what they're doing. Like, that's a great step 4 years ago, and I mean, it's in the right direction.
4 years ago? When was iHeart New York? When was that campaign?
No,
like
1970s?
iHeart Radio.
iHeart Radio, right. And I'm talking about heart signs on like your Tumblr and the fact of liking, and that's where that comes from. Oh, you click things to like, you click a heart, you like it. iHeart Media, they're going to like it. No, dummy, they're not going to like it, and you look like a 60-year-old girl came up with this idea. Nothing against 60-year-old girls, because I'm sure there's tons of smart ones, much smarter than me. I'm just saying in general.
You could be Rainbow Unicorn Radio.
Girl would say. Yeah.
Probably a 60-year-old man that came up with the idea, actually.
Mm-hmm. That makes it even worse.
Like I said, there's a 60-year-old girl is probably
kind of people creepy. Then it's kind of creepy.
They sit around, and who comes up? And no one checks them. No one says, don't do that. You're in the right direction, but let's make it a little bit better.
There's two things I can't do, and I don't know if it's because I'm a 60-year-old man or because I'm a man or what, but I can't do the heart thing with the fingers. Every girl can do this.
I couldn't do the Macarena back when it was popular. I could not do it for the life.
And I can't do the, aw. Every girl can do that. Aw, heart. What are you laughing at? Can you do it? You can't do it? But you're a girl. So not every girl can do it. You are wearing a pink watch, though, okay? Mm-hmm. I just want to point that out. Aw, I heart your watch. I'm just not very good at that. Aw. Nothing, huh?
No. Nothing. No, iHeart Media. They need to change that again. I know they just changed, but somebody needs to do
it. I know. It was like so weird.
I actually like Clear Channel better myself.
Clear Channel's a great name.
That's a good name.
That's a radio name.
Yeah, it really is. Well, it's more than a radio name. It could be a channel and more than
it's a clear
more than just radio.
The real,
it's a clear
you know,
channel.
And the problem is
clear
they,
and present media.
Yeah, clear and present media.
That's I good. Think I'm on some of those stations too, and you know, it's okay. They're clear.
Yeah, we love them. No, we're not knocking them. No siree. Yeah. Love that radio. It's a future there.
It does. And the past, too.
And the past.
Long past. Yeah.
Twitter has agreed, reached a deal with Google to put tweets back in Google Search. I don't know if... Remember, everybody, Google used to have tweets in Google Search.
Yeah.
And
mm-hmm.
then the deal ended, and no one complained, right? Nobody said, oh, gosh, I wish there would be tweets in my searches again.
Actually, they annoy me when I find them.
I'm looking
for real content. I'm not looking for tweets.
I don't want this to happen.
Yeah. If I want to search tweets, I go on Twitter and I search.
Exactly.
Yeah. But their search is terrible. I mean, you have to admit. So
Twitter search.
They should license Google search engine. You know, they could do that.
So they've made a deal with Google to get what's called the fire hose, which is the we've been calling it the fire hose for years, but it's got to really be a fire hose now. All the tweets from all 284 users into the Google search engine, which means, I guess, I don't know. I'm going to vote against this. You're going to start seeing tweets in your search.
If I Google Leo Laporte, am I going to get every one of your followers' tweets?
That's what I'm afraid of.
That's what
people use my name in vain.
Well, of course.
Right. And I don't really want that. I do not want to. Oh, Leo Laporte.
I mean, I figure Google's smart enough for that, right? But for me, it's more like if you want to look up something that's happening right now and there's no news stories about it yet, you typically look to Twitter. But Twitter search isn't very good.
Right.
So for me, it makes sense having it all on one screen.
Okay.
Like there have been incidents here in New York where I see a car crash or I see like a street is closed down. I'm like, what is going on here? And Twitter is the way I figure that out. But that's after a lot of like culling through junk Twitter feeds and things like that. So. It could be good, but
it's true. When somebody asks me, did a celebrity die? The old days, you turn on the radio or you turn on CNN. No, you just go to Twitter.
Right.
It's like so much faster, sometimes inaccurate.
The problem is with that, too, is I still need to go to some reliable source because I can't trust people's tweets. I mean, people pass around the Onion post like it's gospel and then they realize it says the Onion. I mean, I've seen people go half a day. 30 comments deep, and I'm like, you know this is the Onion, right? And then I delete all those people. But I'm just saying, like, you still have to check from somewhere.
Yeah.
So
it's all about following the link, though. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep. Are you still paying the 5-cent post office tax on every email you send? I'm still getting messages telling you that the law that's about to come into it.
I knew that was true.
It's true.
Twitter stock pops as company tops earnings expectations. This is another Twitter story. I guess good news for Twitter because for a long time the assumption was unless Twitter grows at this same torrid pace with new users, it's not going to do well in the stock market. But because they didn't grow as fast, but their earnings were good, the stock did well. And that's actually a good thing for Twitter because that was becoming a problem. The issue of having to grow at this crazy rate. They almost doubled quarterly sales.
Mm-hmm. Like, honestly, the expectations for Twitter were starting to worry me because I think, you know, of all these services, it's probably the one I use the most and rely on the most every day. And I didn't want it just to die in a year or two just because it didn't get enough users. But I think people are realizing, hey, they're actually making money. So maybe let's not focus on how many new people they can add. Let's focus on what they can do with the people they already have.
Yeah, people were concerned because last quarter, Instagram actually surpassed Twitter's monthly active users.
Right.
And there was some real concern that this is going to hurt Twitter. It also is bad because it was forcing Twitter to just do whatever it could to increase user growth, which often meant that the quality of what was on Twitter went downhill. In other words, they were not blocking junk accounts, spam accounts, troll accounts because they needed the numbers.
And there's all these auto-posting accounts. I mean, I'm flattered every time I write a column for the Huffington Post that, you know, 1,000 people tweet about it, but I wonder how many of those are bots that actually just automatically do that.
Sure. Have you noticed what's happening to me lately is stuff that happened a long time ago is getting retweeted.
Yeah, like, I noticed that too.
Somebody just posted, Twit covers the Apple iPhone announcement yesterday.
I had a panic this morning. There was a tweet that said that I was giving a talk at a conference. And I said, wait a minute. I spoke at last year's conference. And I said, did I miss the fact that I agreed to give this speech. It turned out that they just today tweeted the fact that I'm going
what's
to give
a speech.
What's
that all about? Devendra, okay, do you know what's going on there?
I think the bots are just getting, they're trying to make their content look a little more real. And for the longest time, we've seen them just like copying other people's posts right. and stuff. But maybe interacting with tweets is better for the bots. I don't know.
I've never understood, yeah. though, why, how this works. So what mm-hmm. these bots are like tweeting normal stuff so that you'll kind of trust them and then they'll put an ad in.
Yeah. Yeah. Or they'll follow you or like they'll start, you know, they amass followers in different ways. So once those things hit a certain amount, they could be valuable for ads. You know, think of like what people do with YouTube when they just like upload random things.
They're just trying to build count users.
Well, the ads are just there.
They'll tweet about content, legitimate online content, but they'll actually tweet to their page that links to the content. So you'll write something for a legitimate news source. They'll tweet about it, and then you go to a page with ads with a link to that news source.
Well, case in point, the bigger point is like when you talk about Instagram, Instagram went through and just demolished all those junk accounts. Like there were literally people that I was following, and they're funny. I was wondering, like, man, how did they get 500,000 followers? When they filled those things out, I saw people with 500K drop down to 10K, like overnight. Yeah. So Twitter doesn't do that, though. Twitter's like, oh, well, there's bots and there's spam. Well, we need those numbers. We're going to leave them. The fact that Instagram did that is shocking to me. And the fact that Twitter, after that whole debacle of numbers and Instagram's numbers aren't real, they don't matter. Well, Twitter's numbers aren't real because the other thing those bots do is you go back to their page and, yeah, they retweeted you, but they also retweeted 30 other people. And then what did all those people do? Go back and why did you retweet something from 10 years ago? And you, like he said, you click on, you go back to their content, or you see something else that might resemble something that's interesting to you and you click on that. So they're dragging you in with this backwards stuff. And it happens a lot. Like there's a lot, like, you know, it's really strange that they don't cut those people out. But again, they need those people. Yeah, all right. As long as they're not abusive, they're not going to just.
But the Grammys are tonight. Okay. Are you going to be sitting there with Twitter scrolling while you watch the Grammys? I bet you are.
I do.
Yeah,
I use the hashtag Grammy. And then I also stick spam in there and I get people to one single click my stuff on Amazon and send me presents. I mean, it's law.
And the Grammys know. I think live TV shows know. When I went to Twitter, first thing I see is, oh, the Grammys are tonight. Make sure you follow the official Grammys thing. And then I go there and look at all. And by the way, only 19,000 followers.
But nobody follows them. They follow the hashtags.
Exactly. 2 million. Important.
Right.
I mean, they really don't. They follow the hashtags.
Like, and apparently Mashable's done a deal with them because there's all these Mashable branded images in there.
Smart.
Isn't that interesting?
Very smart.
It's all funny. Blending, isn't it?
It's crazy. It's more fun to watch these shows via Twitter than it is to actually watch the shows. You know, while you're doing something else, you could just see the updates.
Somebody tell me how some companies that have no real reason to have millions of people following them suddenly have hundreds of thousands of followers. I mean, I understand why Leo has a huge number of followers.
No, but I only have 500,000. The Grammys has 2 million.
Well, but Grammys is a big deal. But I'm talking about guys. I know a consultant who is not very well known, who has like 50,000 followers. There's no way that he could have amassed that.
It's so easy to buy followers.
He's buying.
Can I let you know a little secret? Is that people pay for them. They really do. Mm-hmm. And it's like people say to me all the time, like when I go out for work, because nobody really knows what I do for a living, but I'm a consultant. So I hear this all the time. Well, you only have 7,000 followers. And I'm like, I could whip out 50 of those followers right now that have like a million plus followers and they're following me. So the number versus the quality is a whole different atmosphere. Like, I'm sorry I didn't go out and pay to get 30K fake people. But, you know, it doesn't matter. But a lot of people do that.
But I mean, you could probably write that check. But is that something that you would feel good about?
I have no concept to do that because my basic thing is when I'm trying to teach other people about the internet or show them what's going on. The biggest thing for me is funny is explaining to someone about how Facebook ads work. People want to dump all this money into Facebook and buying likes for their pages. And I'm like, you know, these are click farms in Istanbul. And then they still make me help them buy them. And then after 2 months, I go back and I show them like, look, they're not real. And they're like, oh, well, why didn't you tell me that more? And I said, I broke it down for you from the get-go. But in their mind, they just want numbers. They want numbers. They want numbers.
Yeah.
And they don't care about writing a check. But once those numbers do zero for you, then somebody realizes, all right, we're going to stop writing these checks because it's useless. Mm-hmm. So you got to play the game right.
But it makes
you have to ask for this too, is like this obsession with numbers, right? The new monthly active users. For me, it's more like they need to focus on the service, right? Because there is no feature parity across all of these apps, right? The Twitter desktop app on the Mac can't, I don't think it can play animated GIFs yet. TweetDeck like hasn't had some features that have been all on all the other Twitter things. And it's been really annoying to have a service where it doesn't work properly across different devices because they don't have the time or inclination to actually focus on building those features.
I had to stop using TweetDeck because of that, because there were certain things that when the consistency wasn't the same and it was enraging my heart. I'm like, you know what? I just quit. I give up. And I used to love TweetDeck. Mm-hmm. But for those reasons, you're exactly right. Like, focus on the people that you have and making them more happy, because they'll go out and evangelize for you and be like, dummy, why aren't you on Twitter? And that's how you bring more people. That's how it started. It was an awesome thing that other people had to tell other people about. You know what I mean? Like, same thing with the Grammys. They're going to be memes and jokes. And how many people are going to be at their jobs tomorrow with nerds that don't have the internet and say, look at this. Like, oh, really? That's funny. I could get there for free. I'll download Instagram. And then they'll do it. But that old school telling somebody to do something still works. And they need to focus on those kind of things sometimes.
Mm-hmm. What do you really think?
Now, are the Grammys live? Because I think they are now, right? Because that was one of the problems was... they were not live on the West Coast, and you couldn't go on Twitter for 3 hours, or that you would know what every. So now everything has to be live across live, right? No more delaying for the West Coast.
Olympics are never live in the U.S.
except the Olympics.
Yeah,
well, but it's not like I can't go to
3 a.m.
I can't go to Twitter because I don't want to know who won the biathlon. Nobody's doing that, or do are they?
Some people are probably.
Very few. Let's take a break. Come back with more. Devendra Hardawar from Engadget. Larry Magid from CBS. Owen J.J. Stone. He's a consultant.
I should have put my glasses down. I went all Thuglicious on people. To rant.
You Larry, said people sorry, don't know Larry. What I do, but I'm a consultant. Isn't that what you say when you don't know what you do?
No, I know what I do. Oh, okay. I just don't like to advertise what I do. I work on a referral basis, Uncle Leo. You don't even know where I live, all right? I'm a very popular and special person.
Okay, let me give you an example. If I were hiring an Owen J.J. Stone,
I could redo Twit in about a weekend and make it look a whole lot better for you if you got off of Drupal and went to WordPress. I mean, I could just do these things. I could do these things.
Don't get me started.
I mean, I'm just saying, Uncle Leo, I could do it for you.
Do you know how much we're paying for the Twit redesign?
I'm just saying. I know how much money you wasted. I know how much money you threw away at these people.
How much?
I could help you.
If I just hired you for a year, you could probably design a website, right? And Lord it costs less than I paid.
If you got off of Drupal and moved to WordPress, yes. But you thinking you're going to get that done in-house on that is a very convoluted system. Mm-hmm. I'm just telling Khalil, let me help you. I love you so much for the love of Drupal. So, I was hoping to say, I don't want to make you upset.
Hey, Owen, don't talk to Leo. You just made a sale. I need a redesign of connectsafely.org, and it is a WordPress site. So call me up.
I feel like, Owen, you should just say, I have a set of very special skills.
Leo, there's a reason why I'm sitting here. I'm not just sitting here for my good looks. People on the internet know me. I'm telling you, Leo, I hang out with a very illicit crowd. I don't need one of those a year to live nice. I don't have to work hard, Leo. I do like two or three projects.
You do Squarespace?
And I'm balling.
He must be overpriced then.
You do Squarespace? Because I got to tell you.
Save kids. We care about save kids.
Do Squarespace. I was looking at Jeff Bridges' new Squarespace. Have you seen this? Actually, this is a good time to do a Squarespace ad.
It's got good sounds. He's somebody you should listen to at night to relax to. Because that is very... relaxing.
So he created this website, dreamingwithjeff.com, on Squarespace. And it's actually, I was looking at it, I was thinking, why am I not on Squarespace? What am I, nuts? What am I doing Drupal for? Squarespace is really, I mean, I tell you, this is, Squarespace 7 is amazing. Jeff did his site, dreamingwithjeff.com. Of course, he's from the Big Lebowski and Tron and all that. And you saw it in the Super Bowl ad. You can actually if you go to squarespace.com, go to directly to the dreamingwithjeff.com site. It's a little weird, a little spooky, but also I got to say it's really beautiful. And I'm thinking this is a nice platform. 14 new designs. Now you have 30 to choose from, including designs for specific businesses, musicians, artists, architects, restaurants, weddings, e-commerce. Squarespace will let you try it free for 2 weeks, no credit card needed, so you can really see what Squarespace can do. I should be playing. Let's just play a little Dreaming with Jeff in the back. I love that. Look at the cassette.
One of the things I do to relax is to hum. I thought I'd give you a little humming tune here. This is one that I find I fall into.
I keep waiting for him to say it. I want my carpet, man. You peed on my carpet. Making changes is easier. Live editing on one screen. No more toggling to the preview mode. You get Getty images. You wonder, where did he get these cool images for the album art and all this? Getty images, $10 per image. Social media is built in. Very easy to link up to your Facebook or your Twitter or your Instagram or your Google Plus. Yep, they support it. Tumblr, YouTube, Pinterest, and more. And e-commerce. See, this is kind of cool. So he put all the e-commerce in here, which is really nice. All of the templates, even the $8 a month site, has e-commerce built into it. That's awesome. And by the way, when you sign up for a year, you get the domain name free, and they'll hook it all up. Squarespace.com. If you're interested in creating a great website where you can do e-commerce, if you're a photographer, they've got portfolio sites. A restaurant, they've got great sites for restaurants, musicians, even Jeff Bridges. Go to squarespace.com. Try it free. You don't need a credit card or an offer code. But if you want to buy, when you decide to buy, use the offer code TWIT. You'll get 10% off.
They had a Super Bowl ad.
They had a Super Bowl ad.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was Jeff Bridges. I love Jeff Bridges so much. I looked up and I had already saw Squarespace. I was like, oh, he's on TV.
I love him.
That's so nice.
I know.
That was a good person to pick for that. I mean, if you're going to spend all that money and put it out there, I mean, people love that dude. Like, you can't even be annoyed. The fact that he's on there telling you about something that's awesome and the sound of his voice. You should listen to that tonight to go to sleep, Uncle Leo.
I agree. That's what it's his whole thing. Squarespace.com. Use offer code TET for 10% off.
New weird ads. It's like the Matthew McConaughey and Lincoln ads, right?
Yeah, what is the story with that?
Yeah, just him expounding on philosophy and life. It's amazing. But it's by the guy who directed Drive also directed those commercials. Yeah. So it's like a really interesting vibe they have going there.
You saw the Saturday Night Live takeoff on the...
Oh, yeah.
I actually asked the Ford guys about that when I went and interviewed them. They love it. They're doubling down on those commercials.
So did you ask them if they're effective?
Apparently, they're very effective. I mean, I don't know if they actually sell cars, but they get a lot of attention.
Well, that's what effective would mean in my book.
Well, eventually.
Because, you know, Ford, those ads that you had on TWIT were very effective. Just saying.
Intent.
You know, when I see somebody spend Squarespace or Ford, spend $4 million for a 30-second ad on Twitter.
Right.
I mean, on the Super Bowl, I'm saying, you know, if you spent $4 million with us, you'd have ads in 2020. You'd have ads for the next 10 years.
And you'd actually have people that show the functionality of the devices that they have.
Yeah,
they
have
a lot of cool stuff. I mean, I just bought another car, and I was looking at a Ford, and my biggest problem was all the technology and stuff. I had to go search for it. And by the time I got to the place, they didn't know what was going on. And I'm like, I shouldn't be sitting in this car teaching you about this car. And I asked to get two other people, and they still couldn't do it. I'm like, you know what?
I know.
Never mind. And there's nowhere online where you can just go. They put it in front of TV shows every once in a while. Oh, what address do I go to?
They never show you what you really want to know. And that's one of the things. That's why they bought TWIT. They were on TWIT for 2 years. And then at the end of it, they said, well, we're done. I said, oh, but we're doing great for you. They said, yeah, but it was just a podcast. We were just experimenting.
Yeah.
That's all right.
they pretend to be in front of things sometimes.
No, they're not. You know what? People who advertise, like Squarespace, who's been with us for 4 or 5 years, people who advertise with TWIT, Squarespace credits us with putting Squarespace on the map. They know that these ads really do work. And so I'm not too worried. If Ford gets one of these days, I was talking to somebody who was an ad manager for Procter & Gamble, and he said, we're starting to see digital media, like podcasts, but also, you know, banner ads and stuff, so outperform our broadcast media for big brands and brand names like Tide, and that at some point, it's just going to shift. People are just going to say, why buy a $4 million Super Bowl ad? You get a lot of, I mean, we've been talking about the Super Bowl ads. You get Super Bowl commercials dropping the hashtags. So the folks at Marketing Land keep track of how many hashtags there were. And in the 2014 Super Bowl, 7% of the ads had hashtags, only 50% this year. Wow. So it just shows you thought maybe hashtags were forever. No.
Good.
No. Yeah. Twitter had 3 ads mentioning Twitter. Facebook had 4. There weren't any ads mentioning Google Plus or Pinterest or YouTube or Instagram. However, 28 of the Super Bowl ads did have just a hashtag. Mm-hmm. Twitter might say, well, that means us.
It's just easier to find the conversations now. You don't need the hashtag, right?
I guess that's really true.
The company name or something.
I guess that's really true.
And anymore, to be honest with you, like my basic core, like at Super Bowl, what happened to me was I saw three commercials. I instantly went to YouTube to go find them, and two of them weren't even on YouTube yet, which enraged my heart.
That's a mistake.
What are you doing? The I think it was the Nissan commercial with the dad and the race car driver. I mean, I put in every which word but loose, and it wasn't online.
You're a father of a girl.
I lost my father. I love my dad. My dad was my best friend, and I'm a sucker for that stuff, boy. And
How about the dad is driving his daughter to the airport to join the military?
They got me. I just, what I do is I go to the hashtag, share it.
The only times I ever use a company hashtag on Twitter is when I have when I complain about them.
Yeah.
I mean, when I was on
I think that's the problem.
I used hash Delta, and boy, did I get service as a result of that. Yeah. But I would. Why else am I? They're not paying me to advertise.
Why would anybody use it? Okay, when you're watching the Grammys, okay, that's a good time where the Grammys should really say, "This is the hashtag you should use." Hashtag the Grammy, or whatever it is, because I want to know, because I want to snark on the Grammys, and I want to use their hashtag, right?
That was a problem with the Super Bowl. The Super Bowl had three different hashtags.
Yeah, you need
people
a common hashtag.
SB49, Super Bowl 49, or Super Bowl. There were three different. So that following it, I was like, well, what am I doing? So I just gave up after a while.
That's an example. So it's not the brand, but the event, you want the hashtag, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's not the, I'm never going to hashtag Budweiser.
Right, unless you hate their beer.
However, look at this.
I would at them, maybe.
They Marketingland points out that Snapchat, for the first time ever, featured in a Super Bowl ad. The ad was for Pitch Perfect 2, so that's what the young people are, you know.
That's a great movie, or at least the first one was great.
Loved the first one.
I'm embarrassed to say that I loved it. I had a buddy hanging out with me, and he was
Don't be embarrassed. Maybe we'll watch Pitch Perfect.
I'm like, dude, I was so embarrassed. I told him for 2 days we're on a road trip, and he's like, we're watching. I'm like, we're not. I'm not. And then he put it on. I'm like, oh. And he's like, oh, you like it, don't you? I'm like, yeah. And then it got me, and I was horrible.
Can you do the heart thing? Aww.
I'll pump it for you, Leo.
T-Mobile, of course, hashtag Uncarrier. They did a lot,
I think that would work.
That worked for them, I think,
That worked for them.
Yeah. Avocados.
Is that they can tell you who not to follow on Twitter, right? You can see who the marketers are. It's like, oh, I don't want to see what you're doing.
Okay, I loved the avocados from Mexico. They had the first draft ever. Remember, it was like the prehistoric times, and they had the draft. Remember that ad? Mm-hmm. But their hashtag first draft ever, I bet you there was not one tweet with a hashtag first draft ever. Not one. Right?
Why would I tweet about that?
Let me tell you something. I didn't see any of this because I died, so I didn't get a chance to see any of the show or the hashtag.
What happened? You died?
Yeah.
Have you come back?
Commercial? That nationwide commercial?
Oh, that's the worst.
Oh, I died, so I didn't get to see any.
Hashtag I died.
Oh, man, it was, and people were like, oh, people don't want to see serious commercials. I'm like, not even that it was just serious. It was like, I was trying to, like this little kid. He's wearing a tuxedo, and I'm like, why is he? And I finally realized, like, oh, he's on some Sixth Sense stuff. Like, I see dead people. And then once I realized that, I'm like, this is sad. And I was watching a game, and I was happy, and I was drinking. And now I got a kid that I'm worried about a TV falling on her, and that's not cool.
My favorite one, it became a meme, so they got their mileage out of it. There was a lot of, like, internet meme pictures with But I Died. My favorite one was, I would have given the ball to Marshawn Lynch.
Oh, yeah.
But I died.
I did see that one, too. That was funny.
I saw it before I saw the ad, and I thought, "What? I don't get it." And then I saw the ad, and I got it.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was a creepy ad. But you know what? They may have got it. Toyota, did anybody tweet with the hashtag One Bold Choice?
No.
That's not me.
I mean, I shared it, but I didn't.
And I drive it to
you. Look at that.
BMW, hashtag hello future. I don't think
that's original. Yeah.
Well, last year, what car company was it? Was it Maserati had like a spot and people were like, well, why do they spend money on that? I was like, because people that drive a Maserati don't really need commercials.
Microsoft.
There's no reason for you to put that on TV.
I remember when IBM was selling a multi-million-dollar mainframe on the Super Bowl. I'm trying to figure out. There's 10 people in the world. Who would buy such a computer?
But they're all watching.
I guess they're all watching. That's an expensive way to reach them.
Microsoft Super Bowl ads, which were very touching. The hashtag empowering. Not one tweet. Not one tweet with empower. Oh, hashtag empowering. Radio Shack. We'll end with a sad story. You want to end with a sad story? This is sad. We should have a...
R.I.P.
R.I.P. Radio Shack.
I love radio. When I was a kid, I used to go in there. I'd buy one cable. I'd buy one switch. It was a guy who worked there actually knew something about electronics. You go in there now and it's just a miniature Best Buy. It's not what it was.
When I was a kid, my dad worked at Radio Shack. And let me tell you, it was like the coolest thing in the world. I thought my dad was so cool. Like I put those oversized headphones on and you know what I mean? I'm in there jamming, listening to me like blowing my I just remember sitting there blowing my ears. I listen to music and my dad actually helping people solve problems. You know what I mean? Like people would bring things in there and he'd be like, okay, you need this, you need that. And they'd buy it, he'd open it up, put it all together for them, say, take it home, plug it in. And like that went away.
Your dad was a rare guy at Radio Shack.
Two words.
Oh, he was. He
Two
was.
Words. Battery club.
That was good.
Yeah, that was good.
Yeah.
Yeah,
but that's why they went out of business, because you bought one switch, somebody else bought a battery. I mean, it's no, and Owen's dad spent 3 hours explaining how headphones work.
Yeah,
it's not a business.
It's funny.
It's not a business model.
As a person, that one thing I saw the page is like 43 things you could buy at Radio Shack in 1980 are now on your cell phone. Yeah. It's like, oh, Radio Shack, I feel so bad for you. They put grandma out the pasture. Grandma taught us a lot.
We can understand why SkyMall died, right? SkyMall, nobody needs SkyMall. That doesn't need to be printed anymore. But Radio Shack, that was like legitimately useful. And it shows the failure of the imagination of the company not to like...
I agree.
Everyone wants gadgets now. Everybody wants tech. It's the hottest thing around. How do you not make that work? And these aren't big stores. These are tiny stores. You can do something to make
it
that work.
It feels like to me like bookshops closing. Like independent bookstores closing all over the country. Because this was the one place... In almost any town in America, you could go and buy a resistor.
Sure.
You know,
and they went to the model of selling lower end things instead of moving to the higher end thing.
Remote control trucks and cell phones.
I bought my first cell phone. Yeah. I bought my first cell phone from Radio Shack and it was like $600.
Yeah.
Like now they're like, they sell everything and it's the worst of everything you could buy. Like they don't have anything current.
I don't know if it would have saved
no imagination
them,
of what you're saying.
But I feel like if they'd made every Radio Shack a maker space.
Right, exactly. And they talked about that. They were going to do that, and they never really followed through on it. They did a deal with the Maker Faire, but they never really followed through
on
it.
That was the opportunity.
Great idea. Yeah,
and,
I agree.
And they could have caught a tiger by the tail. Smartwatches are being banned from universities because they're worried that kids are using them to study.
What?
You mean cheat on tests?
Oh, cheat. Study, cheat. It's a small difference.
Come on, Uncle Leo.
You study ahead of time. You cheat during the exam. Is that how it works?
Stupid exam.
I'm studying during the exam. That's all.
So it's the next thing universities are blocking, right? Because when I was in school, they didn't allow us to have our laptops there during class. Although now, and that was like 10 years ago, now everybody has their smartphones out, probably taking notes on their smartphones.
Well, and they banned smartphones. And so the next step, of course, banned smartwatches because...
Sure.
What they need to do is change education so that you're testing
thinking
as opposed to memorization, and then you can have all the smartphones you want. We already talked about that.
We talked about it, and you're absolutely
right.
That's
crazy.
Hey, if you missed anything on Twit this week, boy, you missed some good stuff. Let's take a look real quick.
Previously on Twit.
Let's see. I don't really want the mullet here.
Why?
So
you don't miss the long hair that much.
Have Burke unplug the entire brick house and plug it
in. Yeah, okay.
Tech news today.
FCC Chairman Tom Wheeler detailed his plan to reclassify ISPs as common carriers under Title II of the Telecommunications Act.
You know, I think you're going to have a big fight on your hands. This is close to the worst case scenario for the ISPs. It's close to the best case scenario for net neutrality advocates.
Floss Weekly.
CRETA is meant to sit down with a blank piece of screen and start painting.
If you can actually draw.
If I could draw. You know?
It almost fits. It's almost there.
Twit. Now in color.
The AT&Ts and the Comcasts of the world can bite me, basically. I mean, I don't care what they want. We need net neutrality. This is forever. And it's like the most important decision the government's going to make this decade, I think.
Awesome. Mike Elgin. Actually, Mike does TNT Monday through Friday, 10 a.m. Pacific, 1 p.m. Eastern time, 1800 UTC. You get your daily dose of tech news. He'll be covering some big stories this week. Mike, what's ahead?
Coming up this week, AOL, NVIDIA, and Cisco have earnings calls scheduled for Wednesday. OnePlus is expected to reveal on Thursday more information about its own fork of Android, which is called Oxygen. The company is moving away from Cyanogen and plans to release its minimalist operating system sometime in the future. Also on Thursday, Xiaomi may hold a press conference in San Francisco, but nobody knows for sure what they'll be talking about. It's unlikely that the company will be launching smartphones officially in the U.S. market this week. Then on Friday the 13th, Google and toymaker Mattel are holding a New York City event to announce products they've been collaborating on. I, for one, am hoping for a new glasshole Barbie. That's what's coming up this week. Back to you, Leo.
Glass old Barbie.
I didn't know Twit was in color. I'm going to have to get me one of those color monitors.
He left out the most important word, in living color.
Yeah, because I watch it on a Mac SE, I think.
Yeah, no. You don't want to watch this in black and white. You lose all the fun.
Gee.
Yeah.
Radio Shack going out. Barbie's going out of style, too.
Maybe I go to Radio Shack and buy me a color.
I am intrigued. What could Mattel and Google be doing? And the fact that Xiaomi is having a press conference in San Francisco, this is a company that only sells smartphones in China, makes me think that maybe they want to get in the U.S. market. Actually, that would be great. The Xiaomi phones are really interesting.
Mm-hmm.
You have the Mi 4, right, Jason? Did we get one?
Yeah, we do have the Xiaomi
Amazing
Mi 4.
Amazing battery life.
And yes, I would say the camera was the one downside to that, in my opinion.
Oh, bad camera.
The hardware is just really impressive.
I would love to see more Xiaomi. I just bought a new OnePlus One. I had given mine to Father Robert because I'm very interested in Oxygen. I really want to know what they're going to do. I think CyanogenMod's awesome, but we'll see what Oxygen does. So there's some interesting news ahead.
Yeah.
Make sure you tune in. Devendra Hardwar, he's covering all sorts of stuff, Internet of Things, gadgets, and more at Engadget.com. He's on the Twitter at DEVINDRA.
Yes.
Great to have you this week. Thank you for stopping by.
Thanks for having me.
Appreciate it. You win the big microphone prize.
Oh yeah, it's a little close to the mic, but yeah. Can I plug my movie podcast too?
Oh yes, Slash Film.
Always good to do that. Slashfilm.com. We review movies every week, and this week we're going to do Jupiter Ascending, which nobody likes, but I loved because it's big and dumb, but it's a lot of fun.
Is that a movie or is that a TV show? Jupiter
Ascending. That's the new Wachowski's brother movie. Yeah.
Oh, I love the Wachowskis.
Yeah, their vision is always too far ahead of like what they can actually put together. But I love their vision, so it's great.
Is that the one where Anne Hathaway's an astronaut and her thing blows up, and then George Clooney comes and
this is Channing Tatum. It's a whole bunch of those.
It's all of that together.
Channing Tatum as a space wolf hybrid man. It's great.
Yes, I don't think Channing Tatum's credible in the future.
I was going to see the movie, but it got such bad reviews, and I wanted to see it so bad. It's just a fun movie.
Yeah, big dumb sci-fi. It's so good. It's not meant for anybody who's not a geek.
Who else is in that? Channing Tatum,
Mila Kunis, Sean Bean.
That's
Bean's
right. Mila Kunis is in that.
Yes. Yeah. Eddie Redmayne is in it, who just played Stephen Hawking.
He was so good in The Theory of Everything.
He's chewing on the scenery in this movie. Like, he is amazingly campy. It's fun.
He transformed into Stephen Hawking in a way that was so credible.
Yeah,
that it was amazing, just phenomenal. All right, Jupiter Rising, Ascending,
Jupiter Ascending,
Ascending.
Yeah,
I love the Wachowskis.
Mm-hmm.
So I will go see that for sure. Because they
hate me if you don't like it, but I think it's a lot of fun.
What was their last? Or was
they
she
did Cloud Atlas a couple of years ago?
Yeah, Cloud Atlas was good.
Mm-hmm. It was really good, but also super ambitious, and nobody saw it. So that's kind of.
I had read the novel. And I loved the novel, and I thought, this would be interesting to make this into a movie. And it was about exactly what you'd expect. Like, what the hell is going on here? Actually, the movie was more intelligible than the novel, I have to admit.
I think so, for me.
Unusual.
Yeah. That's because they could show the weird tattoo or birthmark that all these people have. Oh, Doctor, you are...
I'm a man who loves you, Uncle Leo. I am a friend. I am a family man. I am happy for you and your exciting moves this week. Congratulations, by the way, on a side note. And I'm happy that you had me on and that you care enough to bring me back. Because I always say stuff that usually would get anybody else kicked off. And I know that. But you keep bringing me back. So that shows how much you love me. And you keep me around as family. And I appreciate it. As always, find me on the internet at O'Doctor on Twitter. Talk about crazy stuff, probably the Grammys in the next 15 minutes. Because that's what I'm about to be doing for the rest of the night.
You do look like Suge Knight, though, especially with those sunglasses on.
I've gotten away with a couple times. I was growing out my Uncle Phil last week, and I had the hair go, and I was wearing sweaters practicing for Halloween, but I shaved up, and I do look Suge Knight-alicious at the moment, but I stopped smiling.
If you got WordPress, you need Owen. If you're using Drupal, don't bother. Just leave. Don't walk out the door.
I'm not smart enough for Drupal, apparently. That's what the chat room told me, so I got to just accept that.
Oh, that's so not true.
Somebody drooped some knowledge on me, son. They're like, you don't understand the strength of Drupal, brother. You need to get yourself together. I'm like, all right, you know what? I don't know. I don't. I'm sorry. I apologize.
I'm told the chat room, who is never wrong, says it's not pronounced Sugar. It's Shug.
See, I don't even like to correct you, Uncle Leo, because it's cute to me. It's cute.
We're just going to let you keep doing it, Leo. Yeah.
Uncle Leo crosses the streets. He's not from the streets. Y'all got to let him slide sometimes. You see what I'm saying?
I'm the old guy who goes, I love that 50 Cent. He's fabulous.
It's good music.
All right. Thank you, Shug. Shug, why do you put the E on it? If you got, you don't need an E if it's just Shug.
And I mean, if you stood next to the dude, I mean, now he's like not scary as much as he was, but he was so scary. It didn't matter what he did. He was a scary individual. Like, grown men, Mike Tyson's of the world were afraid of this dude. So
anybody named his record label Death Row is obviously going for that.
He hung Vanilla Ice out a window. He's crazy.
Okay, I'm down with that. That I can get down with. Is that how the kids say it?
Baby, you don't mess with him. That's a good dude. I mean, shoot, ninja. Look, go, ninja, go.
You know, and you are a hard act to follow. You didn't even bother.
And Larry Magid.
You can't follow that guy.
Everybody should celebrate Safer Internet Day on Tuesday by going to
SaferInternetDay.us. You can watch the stream at 4:15 Eastern. Come check me out at larrysworld.com, where you find, by the way, check out larrysworld.com or safekids.com, an article on revenge porn. Doesn't sound like a lot of fun, but a fascinating story.
Actually, we didn't get to that story, but that's,
I wish we had time for
California
that.
Became the first state ever to convict somebody for that, and I think that's a right-on thing.
Yeah, and you'll find that story at all my websites, safekids, connectsafely.org. It's got that story. Fascinating story.
Sad to say, though, this guy kind of got a little bit of a slap on the wrist.
Yeah, but you know, it's not about porn; it's about betrayal. That was my lead on this. It's you know, porn is legal. Revenge porn is a betrayal.
Horrible.
It's a violation of trust.
And this guy was really sleazy because, of course, first he put up a website that said, "Send us pictures of your ex girlfriend and get back at them." And then he would go to the ex girlfriend and say, "Hey, if you give me $350, I'll take the picture down."
Extortion. Sextortion.
It's like the worst. I mean, that's as low as you can go. He is facing up to 20 years in prison, so I take it back. That's not exactly a slap on the wrist.
He gets serious jail time.
Yeah, I hope he does. That's the right thing to do. Thank you, Larry. Thank you, Owen. Thank you, Devendra. We do Twit every Sunday, 3 p.m. Pacific, 6 p.m. Eastern Time, 2100 UTC. I'm sorry. That's wrong. 2300 UTC on on twit.tv. You can watch live. If you don't watch live, though, we can make it available to you if you wish for a small fee. No, it's free. All you got to do is go to the website, twit.tv, and download a copy or iTunes or get the apps. They're all over the place. Roku, iOS, Android, Windows Phone even. Just search for Twit in your app store. Thank you for being here, everybody. One more sad note. Joseph Grado, the founder of Grado Labs, which is the greatest headphones ever, just passed away this week at the age of 90. But he made great, great headphones, and you could still buy them. And many people consider the Grado, including my friend Patrick Norton, the best headphones made. Thank you, everybody. We'll see you next time. Another Twit is in the can. Bye-bye.
I love the golf clap at the end of every episode.
Doing the Twit. All right.